It was in the foster.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, I'm going to call the order of the 85th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection Planning Council. My name is John Weingart, Surgeonsville, Hunterdon County.
Josh Fire, Morris County Freeholder.
Scott Whitehead, Public Member, Morristown.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Representative, Hunterdon County.
Janice Kovach, Town of Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Bill Cotton, Mayor, Chester Township.
Glenn Vitrano, Sussex County Freeholder.
Mimi Les Precipity, Morris County.
Aiken, Cranston.
Deputy Pascarelli, Warren County Representative, Greenwich County.
We do have a forum present. This meeting has been advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. All who wish, please rise for pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A fairly full agenda for this sunny day. Begin with the minutes from our last meeting on April 16th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move the minutes.
Second.
Any comments, corrections? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstained.
Abstained.
Passes.
Are we two abstentions?
Yeah.
We have nine members present, so we only have seven.
Okay, I was going to report on action in Trenton concerning appointments and reappointments and filling of vacancies on the Highlands Council, but it's gotten too confusing for me, so. The Senate Judiciary Committee has been meeting. The governor did nominate me. There were 11 of the 15 members of the council who require some action. 11 seats require some action in that members have either resigned or their terms expired. Governor had nominated four people, as you know, for some of those seats. Judiciary Committee was active on one or two or three, and I guess we'll figure out over the next day or two where that stands. Does anybody else know? Do any members have other matters about?
I'd just like to note that Tahisha Way has just entered the room.
I just wanted to have a special guest today. It is my daughter. And she has been curious as to who I'm in the phone with all this time for the last 5 years. According to her nails, I wanted to sit in the meeting. Some school's out. I brought her. She'll be here for a short time. But also, I thought it was appropriate because we should all keep in mind the business that we're conducting here is about the people of that generation and about what kind of world we're going to leave to our successors. So I think it's appropriate that she be here. Probably the youngest member of the audience. And she's one of the most informed public members of Greenwich Township because she attends the meetings with me. So it's only right she attend this council.
What's her name?
Oh, Alexandra Pitt.
And then also, I'd like to acknowledge Rachel Weinrich, who's here as a Rutgers student in human ecology and film, who's helping this meeting. Turn to the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the council. Good afternoon, and members of the public. I'd like to start by giving you an update on where we are with the process of plant performance and other issues. So I will be using a PowerPoint just to assist me in bringing you up to date. I'll be just bringing you briefly up to date on the plant performance update, the plant performance grants for 2009, and our Highlands TDR program. So in terms of plant performance, this map here shows you in blue the municipalities that are currently working with us on plant performance issues. You will see here this dark line is the line that delineates the preservation area in here versus the planning area on the outside. Currently, 74 of the 88 municipalities in the Highlands have filed a notice of intent to conform to the Highlands Regional Master Plan. That notice of intent is non-binding in the planning area. It allows those municipalities to work with us this year to assess the implications of the Regional Master Plan for their particular municipalities, to aid them in making an informed decision. 72 municipalities of the 88 have applied for an initial assessment grant, and 23 initial assessment reports have been completed. As those grants are completed, the deliverables done, they will be posted on our website for those of you that would like to see those reviews. The initial assessment grant is a grant, again, that allows municipality working with their professionals to consider the regional master plan, and again, the implications for their municipality, and bring to our attention certain issues or concerns that they may have. 73 of the 74 municipalities have filed the 2009 plan conformance grant application. And that grant application, it allows them to work with us on issues throughout this year in order to meet the deadline established by statute December 8, 2009 for preservation area lands for those municipalities to give us a conforming petition for plan conformance. And in for those planning area communities, they do not have a deadline. However, some of them took advantage of an extension from COA for their third round subcert petition. And they also have to have that plan done by December 8, 2009. Thus, many municipalities will be making up their decision in this current year. Looking at the different modules we have, Module 1, which is the basically a vacant land analysis of the first part of our build-out analysis, 70 municipalities have submitted their Module 1 data, and 54 have received their Module 1 report. There are sometimes issues where we go back and forth with municipalities to make sure that all the information is correct before we issue that report. For Module 2, 30 municipalities have submitted Module 2 data. Module 2 reports will be issued starting next week on a rolling basis. 11 will be going out next week. That means that those municipalities will have their final build-out results for build-out consistent with the regional master plan. Module 3 is the fair share plan. We had held training sessions June 8th and 11th and had given guidelines to the professionals. We continue to work on coordination with the Council on Affordable Housing to make sure that our actions are consistent with their rules and regulations. Module 4, municipalities were given a sample of their environmental resource inventory. That will be a Highlands environmental resource inventory, and many towns are working on some of these modules concurrently. They don't have to do them in any particular order. Module 5, a revised model Highlands master plan element was posted on the website. And again, municipalities at those training sessions on June 8th and 11th also were given guidelines and guidance in terms of that model Highlands master plan element. We're continuing to work on Module 6, which are the regulations, and Module 7 is the petition itself. 73 municipalities have applied under the 2009 Plan Conformance Grants Program. That's a total of 3,650,000 to be precise, committed dollars. That is at the base amount of 50,000 per municipality. A municipality has the opportunity to go up as high as $100,000 per municipality because of the unique circumstances for each municipality, and provided they show evidence of need, we have the authority from the council to grant up to $100,000. For initial assessment grants, 72 municipalities and 4 counties have applied for a total of $1,134,767 committed dollars. We continue to work with counties, and we had our regular scheduled meeting with the county planners recently and gave them the model master plan element for the counties. So we also had a meeting with Morris County Planning Board and planning officials to talk about plan conformance. So we continue to work with the counties as well. Now, just to give you a brief overview of the Highlands TDR program update. As you know, we have been working with the Highlands Development Credit Bank, and given that this program, there are responsibilities for the council and for the bank, we wanted to give you an update on where we are. So we'll give you a program timeline that has been proposed to the Highlands Development Credit Bank, and provided all the different elements work in the time frame, then we may be able to follow that particular time frame. But that's what we're working on currently with the HDC Bank. I'll talk about that in a moment. We're also working on the Highlands Development Credit Bank operating procedures and have taken comment on those, and on long-term, this TDR program timeline. So to give you an idea of the timeline, conservation restrictions, these are the deed restrictions that are put in place for the development program for the sending area municipalities. We expect council action on that July 2009, so that will be on your agenda for the next meeting. We're currently taking public comment. We'll get all that information to you. The Highlands Development Credit Allocation Determinations. We expect to have the web-based Highlands Development Credit Allocation tool available for the public August 2009. We have a request for qualifications that we expect to take action on July 2009, and that is for a contract to have a firm to assist us in issues such as non-residential development for sending areas. So in that case, we're looking at a very specific analysis for what the Pre-Highlands Act would allow to occur and what local ordinances would allow to occur, so that it's someone with that type of experience. Again, we request your action on that July 2009. And the bank operating procedures, the HDC bank, will be looking at those in their August meeting. For the draft conservation restriction, I want to let you know that was initially a release for public comment, informal public comment, April 17th, 2009. Based on the comments received, we revised those documents and we separated agricultural use from non-agricultural use and posted revised conservation restrictions June 3rd, 2009. Public comment on those revised drafts is due July 3rd. And the council may consider those restrictions at their July 16th meeting. The request for qualifications was posted May 29th, 2009. And again, a little more on that, we are soliciting qualifications and supporting information from firms with expertise in all aspects of land use planning, including site development, site design, and securing local approvals. We want them to have that type of experience to assist us. The purposes, again, are to find a firm that can assist us with these allocations, particularly non-res, received non-residential, receiving zone credit determinations, and redevelopment area planning. The HDC allocation determinations, the Highlands Council should be considering those August of 2009. The HDC, again, Highlands Development Credit, certificate and application, the HDC Bank should be considering that August 2009. And all of this would lead to an open period for a hardship sale of Highlands Development Credits, which would really be the first time the TDR Bank and Programme would be up and operating. We would anticipate that that could happen September 15th through December 15th, a 3-month period. And then consideration of that hardship sale of the Highlands Development Credits by the bank in that period of January through March of 2010. So that brings you up to date on the TDR program timeline and the different responsibilities for the council and the HDC Bank. At the next meeting of the HDC Bank, they will be having a work session to go through some of these issues. And if there's any revision to those timelines, we'll be sure to let you know at your July 16th meeting.
And the next meeting, the Highlands Development Credit Bank is July 2nd at 1. That's all. Any questions for me? I see that people standing. I think there are a few empty seats. There's an empty seat next to you. Can you raise your hand? There's one over there, a couple there. People on the grab a seat. Since we lowered the ticket price, it's going to eighth item on the agenda is planning assistance grants from Merrick Peterson.
If we have several grant applications before us today. They break down into three groups. We have initial assessment grants, sustainable agricultural grants, and TDR receiving zone feasibility grants. So we'll start with the initial assessment grants. Humpton Lakes Borough is requesting $15,000. This is their first grant request. We had an informational session with them since we last saw you, and after that they did make an application, do a notice of intent, and are studying plan conformance now with the Hardy's Council. So that's the first grant, and you have a resolution before you.
Want to move the resolution?
I'll move.
Second.
Comments or questions, council members? Comments or questions to the public? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes?
The second grant application, also from initial assessment, is for Passaic County. It is in the amount of $15,000. Previously, they have been awarded three CP3 grants, which were our county program grants. The first of those was a parcel data grant, which allowed the county to complete a parcel layer in GIS, Geographic Information Systems, to reconcile their information with what can be found in the Mod 4 data. That was completed, so they were successful in doing that program and giving the deliverables to the Highlands Council, and the voucher has been sent to Treasury for payment. The second program they had, the second CP3, again, a county program, was they did a study of prior approval grants that required a county to report on identified outstanding approved projects. This also is a completed project, and the voucher has been sent for signature and down to the Treasury for payment. The third CP3 grant they were awarded was a sewer and water grant, which supported sewer and water service area mapping. And this particular grant, we're waiting for deliverables on that particular one so that we can pay out on it. So that's the past history of Passaic County and their grants. So you have a resolution before you this afternoon on the initial assessment grant.
Chairman, I move the approval of this grant.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Comments? Public comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
Passes? Abstention?
Thank you. We're moving on to the Sustainable Agricultural Grants Program. Both of these grants, if you recall, these grants were two-phase program. So this is phase two for Sussex County. Both of the grants being for Sussex County. I'll give you their previous history of grants, and their work with the Highlands Council has been on these sustainable agricultural grant programs. The first for agritourism in the amount of $50,000, and that has been successfully achieved and completed the deliverables on that. And also they had an agricultural grant for commercial kitchen in the amount of $10,000, and again that has been successfully completed. Mr. Chair, do you want me to take these separately now, or can you act on those together? Okay, so I'll go through the elements of both. The first of these is the second phase of that agritourism, so it's agritourism renewal. It's again in the amount of an additional $50,000. The first was also $50,000. The elements of this grant include continued marketing program to better position and reinforce the region as an agritourism destination. Generation of print materials for region-wide distribution of events and farm-related venues. Development of a website specific to Highlands agritourism. And a formal survey to identify consumers and demographics of Highlands region that can contribute to the support of agritourism projects. The second one is, again, the second phase of the commercial kitchen. It's in the amount of $15,000. The first phase was in the amount of $10,000. The elements of this grant include partnering farmers and students to create value-added agricultural products through the use of the Sussex County Technical School kitchen. Report on process will include interviews with participating farmers, inventory of products and how they were developed, regulatory processes, time frame and costs involved, and pitfalls of the process. So those are the two the grants for Sussex County we're asking you to consider, and you have a resolution before you.
I'll move the resolution.
Second.
I'll second.
Any comments, questions?
Yes.
Public comments, questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
The third set of grants you have before you this evening are for TDR grants. They are feasibility grants. Again, Mr. Chair, would you like to take these together? Okay. The three grant applications all are to achieve the same sort of scope, so I'll go through the scope. Each of the towns has to identify TER receiving zones, potential receiving zones. They have to develop a real estate assessment and description of physical characteristics of potential sites, devise two development scenarios for the potential receiving zones, determine water and wastewater utility capacity for those zones, and submit draft phase one reports. The three towns or municipalities are the Township of Harmony, requesting $25,000. Their previous history has been, they have currently an open COA third round grant with us. They have developed their plan, and we're waiting for materials on that so that we could pay out on that if those deliverables are as they should be. Currently, they have an initial assessment grant and a plan conformance grant, and as you know, we're working on those in 2009. That's their history with us. Borough of Hopatcong, also an amount of $25,000. They have also three grants. The COA third round grant that they had has been paid out, that's been successfully completed. And they also have the two current programs for the initial assessment grant and the plan conformance grant. And finally, the Borough of Oakland, also in the amount of $25,000. And they have two open grants, again, initial assessment and plan conformance. So you have resolution for you for those three municipalities.
John, I'll move.
Okay.
Second.
Other comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Those pass too. We now move on to item 9 on the agenda. Redevelopment area consideration.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You have two project reviews before you this afternoon. The first is the Highlands Redevelopment Area designation for Oak Ridge Road Associates in West Milford. The second one we'll be getting to later. But I would like to point out, Mr. Chair, that the applicant, Mr. Schwartz, is with us this afternoon sitting in the front row here. Again, I'm going to use PowerPoint to take you through this project. And I did outline this project for you at the last meeting, so hopefully you will recall that, and I did, of course, send the materials to you. This is a project for Block 15901, Lot 1, in West Milford. Pre-application meeting was held January 7th, 2009, with initial meetings held previously. In fact, the applicant has been working with us for 2 years, as he waited for the adoption of the plan and then the adoption of the procedures for Highlands Redevelopment Site designation. The Mayor of West Milford, Mayor Bieri, has been advised of this project. We have spoken. It is a single parcel with Highlands Redevelopment Area covering a portion of the parcel. It is an existing commercial facility. The area features existing buildings, one main building, paved and gravel parking areas, and a lawn area with ornamental trees. Approximately 20,000 square foot parking lot is proposed in the lawn area to accommodate commercial tenants. Under the Act, this redevelopment opportunity requires an existing area of 70% impervious surface to be in the redevelopment site designation area. The existing impervious surface square foot is 94,933 square feet. The allowable redevelopment area, based on that 70%, you can get up to 30% more, would be 135,618 square foot. And the proposed redevelopment area is somewhat smaller than that, at 135,208 square feet. This is an aerial view of the site. You see it here shown as two parcels, but those parcels have since been merged into one single parcel. This is the facility. It is, of course, in the preservation area, and you can see that the commercial existing facility here. You can see the surrounding kind of development that has occurred around here, and across the road you see a forested area. And this is the area that we're looking at in question here for this redevelopment area designation. So again, you see the site description here. This site is in the preservation area, but it is in the existing community zone. And it is the reason that much development has occurred in the preservation area, and the legislators saw fit to allow for this kind of an opportunity for businesses within the region to have a redevelopment opportunity, whereby a redevelopment site is designated by the Highlands Council, and then the process goes through a waiver determination from the Department of Environmental Protection to allow for a waiver of the department's Highlands rules so that this project could, and projects like it, if approved, could move forward. The next slide shows you again the existing development proposed area, and here you can see that this area is shown as forested, showing you our resource area mapping. All of this is available on our website using our consistency determination tool. Here again you see forested areas, and it is noted for you that this forested area here, the trees are actually on, not actually on the property, they do overhang the property line. This next slide shows you critical wildlife habitat. Again, you see it here in this color and down here. And again, we're just drawing to your attention that the trees overhang the line but are actually on the adjoining property. This shows you groundwater recharge areas, fairly similar to the previous mapping and location here and here. Now, this shows you open water buffers. You do see that it's separated a road here. And I would note that these wetland areas are upgraded of the site. And it is for this reason, when we show you these resources, the rationale for this redevelopment site designation is that, where it hits on these waivers, or sorry, on these resources, that the department may waive these resources so that, to allow the minimum practical use of the site. The staff recommendation is to approve the proposed Highlands redevelopment area designation with conditions. The consistency determination was posted on the website, public comment was taken. Disturbance of the conditions of these, disturbance of Highlands open water buffer limited to the minimum required for the new parking lot. Remainder of property outside the Highlands redevelopment area to be deed restricted. Stormwater regulations be followed during the Highlands preservation area approval with redevelopment waiver permitting process. That is the process that all of these redevelopment projects, having gained a redevelopment site approval from the council, must go through with the Department of Environmental Protection. It is anticipated that the next step, again, that New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, Highlands Preservation Area approval with waiver, that during this step, the applicant would supply a stormwater management plan that incorporates low impact development techniques. So that brings us to the end of my presentation on this particular project, and you do have a resolution before you this afternoon.
Would someone like to move to introduce the resolution?
I'll move that resolution.
Second. Council, maybe we'll begin to see if there's any public comment before we get to council discussion.
We can't hear you back here.
All right. Is there any public comment on this application? Questions?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I'm looking at the public comments that were received on this application. Can I be heard? Can I be heard? And I note that the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions has submitted a full page of what we now have as bulleted comments. And the fifth one down strikes me as particularly interesting. I wonder if the staff or executive director could respond. AJAC believes that a lot as large as or nearly as large as the proposed lot could be located on the property without impacting the Highlands open water buffer, and would like that to be considered. Should we consider that? I wonder what the outcome of that.
When we take the public comments, you'll note that what we do is we do revise our recommendation reports, that we show those and track changes where we take those into consideration. And it is for that reason that we've said that the Department of Environmental Protection, they are the ones who grant the waiver from that resource, open water buffers, and so they will grant the waiver. But our recommendation is to allow the use of the parking lot, anything else would be deed restricted. And you can see on the slide I'm showing you now, this is the open water buffer, and this is the area, a parking area that Mr. Schwartz has requested. And it is this size parking area that is necessary for, in his opinion, for the continuation of his business. He has already lost a tenant due to the fact that he didn't have sufficient parking.
That was not the question, sorry, that Anjak was asking.
We and we did look at this, and we took into consideration again the upgrading nature of the wetlands, but we recommend that he be allowed to do this, and that this is the reason for these waivers. It is a waiver from this buffer that the council, that the staff were recommending.
If I understand Jack's question, your answer is that the staff concluded that this could not be built, constructed without affecting the buffer.
You are correct, but I'm sorry, I didn't answer most succinctly.
I just wanted to get to that. Thanks, Chairman.
I have a couple questions. Looking at that map, it does make me wonder, how did they come up with their calculations that they need that much of a parking area? And I think, the thing that seems kind of obvious is that the buffer doesn't intrude that far into the proposed parking area. And, it's a little difficult for us to judge whether or not those resources should be intruded upon without knowing why the 20,000 square feet were needed. Also, I see in the staff recommendations that one of the bullets says that a stormwater management plan will be put together according to the New Jersey regulations. But considering that the New Jersey stormwater regulations exempt an area like this from recharge requirements, I think we have to realize that we are going to be losing any recharge that we may be able to get from that portion of the Highlands open water buffer. And I think that's important as a consideration. Thirdly, I know it said in the report, in the consistency determination, I think it was on page 15, that section that talks about the septic system, that the septic system was not going to need to be expanded because there's no building expansion or additional buildings going in. But according to the regulations that govern septic systems, NJAC 7:9A, the calculations for a septic system are to be based on the square footage of the building or the gallons per day for the user of that facility. So, for instance, number of patrons or number of employees. And you're supposed to use the one that has the greatest yield, the greatest number. So you are designing conservatively. And so I don't think the conclusion that there's going to be no building expansion or additional buildings answers the consistency determination question about the septic system. So I can't support this resolution because of that. I think we need to go through that analysis in our consistency determination in order to decide whether or not there will be an impact to the septic system that serves that property right now. But for those two reasons, I have concerns about this.
Can I respond in part to those, and just to say that in our recommendation to speak to the parking area, language was added in response to the comments from Anja, and it reads that the new parking lot be located such that it minimizes the creation of impervious surface within the Highlands open water buffer. Also, it's that kind of site plan that will occur when they move with the waiver request to the Department of Environmental Protection. Also, just to say that the area that we're looking at is a already disturbed area. And then on the issue of the septic, I would like to ask if Dan Van Alst, our Senior Director of Planning and Science, would like to add anything on that issue, because he certainly would know more than I.
Our understanding is that the septic system, as it currently exists on the site, is built to handle the maximum use of the building as it is on the site at this time. The parking lot issue was that the building, when fully occupied, was actually using more than the available parking on the site. And so parking was happening informally around the site off basically areas. And so this would create a formal parking area for the people who are already there. So it's our understanding that there will be no need to modify septic system. The other thing I would note is with regard to the creation of a new parking area, DEP's requirements would apply with regard to stormwater and recharge. The reconstruction of existing impervious surface is exempted from the recharge requirements of the stormwater rules, but not the creation of a new impervious surface. So this should be handled through those DEP rules, and we are specifically calling for DEP as part of this waiver to ensure that low-impact development requirements and stormwater requirements apply to this increase in impervious cover, regardless of the state parking.
Couple follow-up questions.
Mr. Short, let me ask we under with all the other questions council members have, and then I'll call on you to respond.
Okay.
Can someone answer whether or not the gallons per day or the square footage of the building were used to calculate the size of the septic system?
Are you talking to me?
Anybody. Dan, if you look at it.
Just in discussions, we were told that the gallon, that the existing septic system was sufficient to handle the full needs of the facility.
The difference is whether or not the gallons per day or the square footage was used, because I hear what you're saying, that there was informal parking going on, but with a greater parking area, it's likely that there's going to be more people visiting the site or being able to visit the site than there are now. So that could mean that there will be a greater flow to the septic system, and my concern is that septic system designed to handle that flow?
Dan, what you were saying about there was informal parking?
Yes.
What did you mean? Could you explain what you meant by that?
Off-lot parking.
Square. On the street?
On the area proposed to be.
Well,
this area here.
Not out in the grass area, but basically in and around that.
What's the coverage of that area right now?
The total site coverage.
No, no, no.
I don't know the
where the cars were parked, what was underneath them? What you just said, it's the proposed area. Was it grass? Was it gravel? Was it pavement? Or you said informal parking was taking place?
Some gravel. I don't know about grass. Definitely some gravel area.
Okay. Then I would say this issue of there's already informal parking, there's providing additional permits parking areas, not an issue that's supporting this. I think that should be made clear.
Mr. Schwartz, come sit down and speak in the microphone.
It's easier for me to stand. I don't hear well.
Okay, well,
I didn't hear everything you said.
Get in front of that microphone.
Mr. Schwartz, the microphone.
Yeah, but I got the gist of it. And let me say, I'm with you. I'm as environmentally interested as anybody else could be. And I'm not one of these people who comes down and hates the law and hates the administration of the law. I think this was a necessary law. I know sometimes it impacts more than it should on people, but I've been on planning boards and I understand the considerations. And I'm entirely sympathetic to the quandary that you have. You want to administer the law and you want to do the right thing, and I have no problem with that, and there's no hard feelings. I'm not going to give you argument, but I'm going to try to give you facts. Number one is there are two septic systems on the property. Now, when we bought the property, we put in the septic system just didn't work. So we put in one new septic system, and I don't know enough about septics, but they wanted to know how many people, how many employees it would support. And the septic system, as I recall, and I think I'm correct, is that the septic system that we first put in would support 30 employees. And then we came along with a situation where we had multiple tenants, and the lines got clogged because somebody was careless. And I'm a pretty hot-headed guy, and I decided I'm going to put in two septic systems. So we have two septic systems there, each of which is capable of handling the same 30 people, which would have been permitted in the first place. So we doubled up on it, and it was just merely a matter of poor business judgment, but it was just a matter of, you might call it temper or willfulness, that you were going to have your septic system and you were going to have your septic system, and it got clogged. There wasn't going to be any question about who did it. So if there's a question in your mind, if we have ample septic system, if you want me to take an oath, I will. But to the very, very best of my knowledge, we have two systems in there, each of which is alone capable of doing what the town required. With respect to the question of the random parking, whatever you want to call, the tenants wanted more parking. We couldn't give it to them. We didn't want to go into the area that we're talking about for redevelopment, and we told them, if you folks want to put in more parking, you will have to put in gravel. So any place that they park that was not necessarily on the pavement, which is on the edge of the pavement, they had to gravel it. So it's all been graveled for years, wherever they park. So any place is parking, there's gravel. I can't tell you whether that's right or wrong or violates the ordinance or doesn't violate the ordinance. That's the fact. Now, with respect to drainage or water retention, I understand that the law is the law, and I understand we all have to live with it. But the fact is, if you look at that picture, you can see there's a county road bisecting the light blue area. So that our property is on the other side of the county road. If you were there and you actually went to the site and you looked at it, that map would look kind of ridiculous to you, because as you stand where the buildings are and you look up, you see a bank which is maybe 12 or 15 feet high. You can't even see over the bank. And then there's a county road, and then there's a division. So I understand they promulgate these regulations, they pass these laws, and we all have to live with them. So I suppose that if you read the law, that circle is in compliance with the law. But it's really, if you went there and looked at it, I'd say you'd agree with me that it's a total absurdity, because there's a county road intersecting and there are cars going by there all day long. Now, again, I'm just trying to give you facts so you can make an intelligent judgment on your own. With respect to the parking area, the proposed parking area happens to be in a bowl, so that when the water comes downhill into it and the rain rains into it, the water that collects in there cannot escape. It isn't a hill where it runs from one property to the other. It runs from the, in other words, it's pitched down to the road, and then where you see the line of trees at the bottom, there's like a berm. It just comes up again, maybe 6 feet. I would venture to say that if you went from the lower property line and you went back 50 feet, I would say that the grade is at least 8 feet lower than it is at the property line. So that even if we did nothing, and we understand that we're required to put in retention and detention and everything else, and we will comply happily and willingly and understand why it's required. But the fact is, from a practical point of view, it isn't even necessary, because the water all collects in that bowl, and it somehow it seems to be pervious. What's the opposite of impervious? Whatever the word is, it seems to be the opposite of impervious, to the extent that any water that collects in there just simply goes away. It doesn't even last for a day or more than a day. So I would respectfully say that if you'd have seen the site and if you'd actually walked the site and been there, I don't think you'd have the concerns that you have. Now, maybe I didn't hear all the questions because this hearing aid isn't working right. But if there are any other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Are there other comments? Public comments? Yes, come up and state your name.
My name is Deborah Post. I just wanted to comment that the amount of time and money and bureaucratic maze navigation and lawyers' fees and consultants' fees and focus and societal energy that has gone into a parking lot sure does highlight the irrationality and downright insanity of the Highlands Act. One could also almost imagine that today's meeting was a Saturday Night Live skit about doing business in New Jersey. Unfortunately, it was not.
Other comments? Comments from council members? All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
Opposed.
Abstentions? It passes 10 to 2. Move on now to item 10.
Good
The next item on your agenda this afternoon is a Highlands exemption and consistency determination.
Is there anyone to get a few more chairs?
I have two chairs, correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before we start, I believe I'm going to recuse myself. This is the PSE&G application. I'm chairperson of a nonprofit organization which has been the recipient of funding from PSE&G in the past.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm also going to recuse myself. My organization has been involved in the fight against the power lines, particularly in the area that crosses the Delaware River.
Mr. Chairman, could we approve the minutes before board members leave?
Okay.
Yes.
Do we have to reintroduce the motion?
I think it was already moved to the second.
Okay. So this is on the motion of approving the minutes from April 16th. All those in favor approving the minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention?
Abstain.
Raise your hand if you're abstaining. Thank you.
If you push the seats back against the wall, perhaps you can
sit down. Yeah, see, there's one seat in the front for all things.
You see a mimic on the left?
Just push back against the wall.
Okay, let's.
This is the Highlands exemption and consistency determination for PSE&G's proposed 500 kV transmission line, so known as the Roseland-Susquehanna line. I'm going to use the PowerPoint again here to give you some information on this project and some of the history of the project. The existing line is a 44-mile of 230 kilovolts transmission line. In a 150-foot existing right-of-way, it was built in the 1920s. In reference to the Highlands region, it's 26 miles of the Highlands region, 17 miles are in the preservation area, 9 miles are in the planning area. It is a proposed project upgrade within the existing 150-foot right-of-way. The line includes both, would include, the proposal would be to include both a 230 kV line and a 500 kV transmission line. The existing line, 44 mile length, goes through 16 municipalities, of which 9 are Highlands municipalities. Boonton Township, Byron Township, Opatcong Borough, Jefferson Township, Kinlon Borough, Montville Township, Parsippany Troy Hills Township, Rockaway Township, and Spark Township. The map here shows you the line. You can see it in red, going across the Highlands region. This is the existing right-of-way, and the proposal is for this project, this upgrade, within that existing right-of-way. Currently, the existing towers are mostly lattice structures. They range from 72.5 and 187 feet in height. The upgrade to add the 500 kV voltage, the new towers would be between 145 and 195 feet high. They may be lattice structures or monopoles, depending on site conditions. The project includes a new switching station in the borough of Opatcong. The need for this project is to be determined by the Board of Public Utilities. Currently, the information we have, and this has been presented to the Council at previous meetings and at various public forums, is that the need for the project is based on an analysis that was conducted by PJM. PJM operates the grid in 13 states as well as DC. In 2007, PJM conducted a 5-year and a 15-year planning study. The study indicated that 23 existing transmission line circuits in northern New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania are expected to or will become overloaded within the 15-year study period, with some potentially exceeding capacity as early as 2012. EJM has determined that upgrades to the existing electric system are necessary to maintain safe, reliable electric service for customers in the region, including those located in eastern Pennsylvania and northern New Jersey, which includes customers of PSE&G, JCP&L, Sussex Rural Electric Company, and PPL Electric Utilities Corporation. The BPU review of the project. BPU determines whether the proposed installation of the development in question is reasonably necessary for the service, convenience, or welfare of the public. BPU is presently conducting the formal hearings on the project with an anticipated end of hearings in December of this year, as well as informal public sessions on June 11th, June 18th, and June 30th. Should BPU issue an approval, the project requires one of the following: a Highlands Act exemption. The Highlands Council and New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection coordinate on exemptions in the preservation area, and the council determines the exemptions in the planning area. If the project is denied an exemption, the project will need to secure a Highlands Preservation Area approval with a public health and safety waiver from New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. We want to bring to your attention that should it go that route, that only applies to the preservation area. No protections are afforded through that permitting process for the planning area. The project may bypass the state of New Jersey and seek federal preemption from FERC. And that has never been suggested to us by the applicant PSEG. Nevertheless, it is one of the methods that could be considered, as we wanted to bring these to your attention. This map here shows you an analysis that was done on alternative routes. You see the route B here, which is the route that's before you this afternoon. It is the currently proposed route. The alternatives that were studied is this route here, A, which comes down north to south and then joins that route and goes in an eastward direction. And here you see route C, another alternative that was studied. Alternative A is more than 24 miles of new right-of-way that would be needed for that. Alternative B would be constructed entirely within the existing right-of-way and would minimize incremental impacts to the natural and human environment. Alternative B, again, is what is being proposed before you this afternoon. Alternative C, where vegetative clearing would be needed along 19 miles right-of-way if the new line was constructed parallel to an existing line. So clearing would be there along 19 miles of right-of-way. Alternative B has the least amount of wooded wetland crossings, and that's 0.1 of a mile, compared to alternative A, which would be 2.4 miles, alternative C, 1.3 miles. Alternative B crosses the least amount of forest land, 0.3 miles, compared to alternative A, 18.5 miles, and alternative C, 11.4 miles. That is, of course, taken into consideration that alternative B, the existing right-of-way, is already a cleared right-of-way. So that brings us to where we are this afternoon. We're looking at a PSE&G's application for an exemption, number 11, from the Highlands Act. The exemption is for the routine maintenance and operations, rehabilitation, preservation, reconstruction, repair, or upgrade of public utility lines, rights of way, or systems by a public utility, provided that the activity is consistent with the goals and purposes of the Act. So in this case, you're looking at the consideration of an upgrade to public utility lines in an existing right-of-way, and have to determine that the activity under the terms that we'll discuss of this particular proposal is consistent with the goals and purposes of the Act. An exemption granted under the Highlands Act exempts the project from the Highlands Act, the Highlands Regional Master Plan, New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection Preservation Area Rules, and any conforming municipal or county regulations that is conforming to the Highlands Regional Master Plan. Consistent with Regional Master Plan Objective 7F1F, the Highlands Council assesses the project against the Highlands Act, the Regional Master Plan, and DEP's Preservation Area Rules at NJAC 7:38 to determine whether the project is consistent with the goals and purposes of the Highlands Act and therefore should be deemed exempt. A look back on the history of this application before you. Initially, the exemption application was submitted September 5th, 2008, and that exemption request was for the preservation area. December 22nd, 2009, the Highlands Council staff issued a draft consistency determination. 2008. Thank you, Janice. Janice just corrected us. That should read December 22nd, 2008. The Highlands Council staff issued a draft consistency determination, which determined that the project was inconsistent with the Regional Master Plan. Public comment period had been provided through January 30th. May 19th, 2009, in response to council and public comments, PSC&G amended the project to include a comprehensive mitigation plan, and they also amended their application to include both preservation and planning area. May 21st, 2009, the Highlands Council amended draft consistency determination was posted on the Council's website for public comment. June 12th, that second public comment period closed. June 19th, the revised consistency determination with track changes and public comment response documents was posted. We always show track changes to facilitate people who are looking to see what changes were made after the public comment period closed. Again, the amended exemption application is now for the preservation area and planning area. And so this is an opportunity to ensure protections for the 26-mile route rather than the 17-mile preservation area only. And again, an HPAA with waiver would only cover that 17-mile preservation area. The use of the Regional Master Plan to judge consistency. PSC&G amended the application following the guidance provided in the Highlands Consistency Determination Report and, of course, all the public comments received, using the Regional Master Plan to address the inconsistencies. The approach was to examine each issue and avoid, minimize, or mitigate in order to be consistent with the goals and purposes of the Act. Now I'm going to go over the amended application, the contents of that, and some in greater detail. The first is the thing we'd like to talk about are the design changes. The switching station was moved from an extremely environmentally sensitive site in Jefferson to a preferred site in Hopatcong Borough, municipally owned site. This site reduces the number of towers by 11 over the site in Jefferson. In addition, advanced switching station design techniques known as gas-insulated switching gear technology was used, and that will reduce the footprint of the switching station. And it's one of the comments that the council heard during a public comment period previously was that that gas-insulated switching gear technology had not been proposed for the site in Jefferson. So there's two changes here, that low-impact development technique is being used and a preferred site in Hopatcong Borough, reducing again the number of towers necessary. Temporary impacts, access roads. These impacts will be mitigated through planning and coordination with and critical review by the Highlands Council. Further, PSC&G is going to post a performance bond to ensure no net loss of resources, function, and value. They've also included a comprehensive mitigation plan. The concept for that comprehensive mitigation plan. It will be prepared consistent with the Regional Master Plan, using again that approach of avoid, minimize, and mitigate, an approval of specific plans by the council and performance bond of at least $4 million. The performance bond is, would be designed to cover the cost of those plans. So the basis for saying it's $4 million, it could be much more than that, to ensure implementation and completion of those plans. And another part of this exemption application is a financial contribution to a Highlands Preservation and Stewardship Fund. I will go over those now in some more detail. The concept plans for the Comprehensive Mitigation Plan. The Transmission Right-of-Way Vegetation Management Plan. This is based on a plan that was done for the Pinelands area, and PSE&G worked with the Pinelands and other entities on that mitigation approach. So that would be again proposed here for the right-of-way throughout the Highlands. The plan would focus on changing some of the overall management practices of the existing right-of-way to enable the habitats to adapt through directed succession. This will improve their function as habitat for various species of wildlife, including invertebrates. This plan will be based again upon that work that was done with the Pinelands Commission. There's an avian management plan proposed as well that focuses on specific strategies and elements as recommended within several technical documents for reducing bird mortalities from transmission lines. And I would just draw your attention to the fact that in the consistency determination, in response to comments, we've added that the applicant would be required to design the proposed project in accordance with the suggested practices for avian protection on power lines, the state of the art in 2006. That particular guidance would be used. Critical habitat mitigation plan. Based upon field surveys and other available information, this plan recognizes potential impacts to various threatened or endangered species, recommends various construction methods and timing restrictions to preclude or minimize these impacts to the extent practical. Wetlands and Transition Areas Mitigation Plan. Plan provides mechanisms for restoring the functions and values of wetlands impacts associated with the project. Stream and Riparian Habitat Restoration Plan. Plan provides the mechanisms for restoring the functions and values of stream and riparian zone impacts associated with the project. Stormwater Soil Erosion Sediment Control Plan. Plan provides mechanism again for protecting water quality and runoff associated with the project during construction and for restoring stable soil profiles and for the protection of steep slopes. Historic Archaeological Resources Plan, providing analysis and recommendations to reduce and minimize the impacts of the project on these resources. Also, plan would address green acres issues as several properties encumbered by green acres rules that are administered by the Department of Environmental Protection. The plan would recommend a compensation strategy to remedy the impacts of these diversions, and PSE&G would also work through the diversion process where it's necessary by law with green acres. Forest management plan. The plan is directed at improving forest habitats on parcels acquired to compensate for green acres impacts, as well as minimizing the initial impacts of restoring forest resources primarily associated with the construction of access roads, which account for an identifiable impact for the project. And finally, the contribution to the Highlands Council. As part of the overall plan, PSE&G proposes to make a contribution to the Highlands Council to protect and enhance the existing character of the region and to ensure the continued economic activity in the form of agritourism, ecotourism and heritage tourism in support of the Highlands Act. Based on current land values, it's estimated that the proposed contribution of 18.6 million change would support the acquisition and stewardship of over 2,500 acres of lands within the Highlands region. That's based on information we have to what the average cost paid by Green Acres for acquisition of lands in the nine municipalities that this line goes through. And that 2,500 acres is not considering if you use the funding as leverage working with the state, county and municipalities in terms of grants so that you could include those funding so that you could improve that amount way over the 2,500 acres. The basis for that contribution PSE&G's proposal to make that contribution to the Highlands Council is based on the following conditions and considerations. It's important to note that each of the issues that are addressed in this plan are a direct response to the consistency determination. And there are two areas under the in the consistency determination that this contribution responds to. And they are the historic, cultural, archaeological, and scenic impacts and sustainable economic development within the region. So in the Highlands Council consistency determination issued, the original one, December 22nd, 2008, the council identified the following issues and maps. The impact on the special environmental zone in the preservation area. The special environmental zone is a response to the mandate of the Act to designate an area where the Act said no development shall occur, and that is within the preservation area. So we looked at the impact on that zone, the impact on existing preserved open space, the impact on parcels considered high priority for preservation and acquisition, and the impact on the 7 mile area adjacent to the right of way. Now that was again from the initial consistency determination based on the Vermont Public Service Department study that the impact of these lines could be up to 7 miles adjacent to the existing right of way. So there was the beginning of the basis for this, the compensation here. This is the first of the maps that was shown in that consistency determination of last December. You see in the orange and sort of red colors here, these are conservation priority areas, high and medium. Again, a response to the Act's mandate that the council prioritize lands that are important for conservation priority. The other colors here show existing preserved open space. This is the second segment of that map. So you see here that we show it in three segments. So again, the same information, the second segment, you have conservation priority areas, moderate and high, and you have existing open space. I will note that in these maps, you're not seeing the special environmental zone and the ag priorities, because again, this was in their amended application, these issues were addressed. And this is the third map, again, showing some of the conservation priorities here, and again, already preserved open space. So in response to the council's analysis of these lands, the PSE&G CMP, their Comprehensive Mitigation Plan, in Appendix D in the application that you received, proposed a plan to have the minimal practicable degradation of existing public attributes at the site and within the surrounding area. That language is taken from the Highlands Act, Section 36. So the basis that we looked at then was those lands within that, at the site within the surrounding area. So PSE&G examined the following within that 7 mile area. Highlands Preserve lands, 69,695 acres. This is from data that's available online from the Highlands Council. Special environmental zone, 12,911 acres. And I think we should note that the entire special environmental zone for the preservation area is 19,000 acres. So 12,911 of those acres fall within that 7 mile area. Conservation priority areas, 46,003 acres, and agricultural priority areas, 2,947 acres. So again, these would be already existing public lands or lands that were prioritized for preservation. So PSE&G, again, in calculating the proposed contribution, looked at the impacts within the 7 mile area. So again, you're looking at already preserved lands and lands considered to be priority for preservation. The impacts upon these lands for, in terms of ecotourism and agritourism and also heritage tourism, because many of the preserved lands have been preserved for historical or cultural attributes. Those total acres multiplied by $7,500. Again, the $7,500 figure comes from the technical documents released by the Highlands Council in support of the Highlands Regional Master Plan. The study was done using the monies that had been spent by Green Acres in this case, we used just the 9 municipalities the line runs through, and the average price per acre for preservation was $7,500. And an impact assessment multiplier based upon the distance from the project. We looked at approximately, under the regional master plan and the consistency determination, approximately 28 resources. And we're speaking here, many of those resources and the reasons these lands were preserved still holds true, so natural resource protection as an example. But in the case of the two areas I mentioned, cultural, archaeological, historic, and scenic attributes, and the sustainable development potential, those two areas then were looked at in terms of potential loss. And again, then looking at those, the multiplier was used looking at the distance from the line. So for example, the closer you are to the line, the more the effect is apparent as you get towards the 7 miles as a drop-off. The amount using that basis was established as $16,773,024. PSE&G then looked at permanent impacts. The switching facility in Opatcorn Borough results in 5 acres of permanent impacts. And in this case, using the technical documents available again on the web for the TDR for HDC Highlands Development Credits, they calculated 145 Highlands Development Credits. That is for a full use of those 5 acres. And again, they used here the cost of 7,500 acres being, again, the cost that we established before, not the base that has been established for the HDC credits. And that brings that amount, so for those 5 acres, 1,087,500. Temporary impacts. Impacts to the existing access roads, estimated at 20 acres. And if it is to be more, again, that would be adjusted accordingly, calculated with a 5-to-1 mitigation ratio. That 5-to-1 mitigation ratio comes from an analysis by Green Acres when you do a diversion. If you cut through the woods, for example, they look at a 5-to-1 mitigation ratio. So that same basis was there and was used in order to assess the amount of those temporary impacts. So for those 20 acres, again, using that $7,500 per acre figure, the amount for those 20 acres is $750,000. So that provides the council and the public with the information on the basis for those figures. The staff recommends to the Highlands Council a Highlands Council approval of Highlands Act exemption application with conditions. Use of the existing right-of-way and location of new switching station results in unavoidable inconsistencies. The comprehensive mitigation plan mitigates those inconsistencies sufficiently that the project, as amended and viewed as a whole, is found to be made consistent with the goals and purposes of the Highlands Act. The exemption determination is conditioned upon an approval by the Board of Public Utilities. Need for council approval of those detailed comprehensive mitigation plans in coordination with New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection and other appropriate agencies and posting of a performance bond. It is the practice in terms of these kind of plans, and it's done regularly through the permitting process, that when you're in the field and you're doing the site analysis, you can then prepare those plans. You would have with you experts in the field. PSE&G would be required to have those experts, and experts in the field from New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and other agencies, to make sure that those plans are the best to protect those resources, and sign off by this council on those plans, a performance bond in place to make sure that they're carried out, and the monitoring to make sure that they effectuate the plans fully, so that they work on the ground. All of that is a part and parcel of this. So that is the recommendation of the Highlands Council staff, and you have a resolution for you this afternoon.
Thank you for that presentation. Would someone like to introduce the resolution?
I will.
Okay. Second?
Second.
What I'd like to suggest as a format is that council members ask any questions we have, we then hear public comment, and we then have council discussion. So are there any questions? Of course, yeah.
You had mentioned 16 million
dollars can be leveraged from state, county, municipal. Can that be leveraged against non-for-profits as well?
Yes.
I mean, could you go back to the slide on the timing? I was trying to help with something down there. Is it, Debbie, that's it, okay? So when was the original, okay, it was submitted to us in September, and between September and December, was it between September 5th and December 22nd that a draft consistency report was written?
Yes, and then public comment period was put on.
Okay. And then I recollect nothing happened here and questions were asked until we were amending the week. PSC&G was amending the plan. When was their revised plan submitted? I don't see it on there.
May 19th. The amended project.
Amended the project to include, okay, communication. So May 19th, they submitted it, and May 21st, the council staff submitted a draft consistency plan. The timing there suggests that the council staff was working with PSC&G on amending this house.
Yes, they were indeed. What happened was PSC&G had requested that the council did not take action on the original consistency determination because they wanted the opportunity to address the inconsistencies or to attempt to address the inconsistencies. The council was aware of that, and thus the project did not come before you for determination. During that period, then the PSC&G did take that consistency determination, and they did meet with us, they did work to address those inconsistencies.
But the council did not act to table this or direct the staff to work with PSC&G in developing this plan. Is there any action on the part of council to do that?
There's not a vote. There's been I think in every meeting, the last several, there's been part of the United Bridge report has been the status on this project.
I think, Mr. Chairman, if I could just...
I can't hear you, Jeff.
I said, to expand on that point, that question that you're asking, there is a standard operating procedure here where staff does work with applicants to help change the application if, in fact, that's necessary. So that's not something that we need to do formally.
I would disagree with that.
Well,
for the record. I have a question about the exemption. And I heard about a performance bond, but I just want clarification on this. Because the notes I made listening to this was, if a mitigation plan is proposed but not defined, how is it then enforced by whatever authority grants the exemption, whether it be SDP or whatever. And I believe the answer I heard was a $4 million performance bond. Is that correct? Did I?
$4 million is what we believe in working with PSC&G would be the minimum cost associated with those plans. Should it be higher, they expect to post a bond consistent with the cost of those plans. And the council must sign off on each plan. Should the council not sign off and approve the plans, the project is held up until such time as the each of those plans is approved.
Is that detailed in the resolution, that requirement? In other words, is the exemption to be posed, is it contingent on everything that was just said?
It's the resolution we've crafted is dependent on two things. One is that the applicant itself, PSC&G, has in its comprehensive mitigation plan specified that it will enter into an agreement with the council to implement it and will perform performance bond. What we included in the resolution was that a specific agreement be signed by this council. So the resolution delegates that authority to the executive director to sign a detailed, essentially, a developer's agreement with performance bonds to ensure conformance with the mitigation.
Okay, and that statement made about council will sign off on, what exactly procedure would that be down the road?
Well, this resolution delegates that authority to the executive director to sign a detailed developer's agreement to report back to the council on that signing of the developer's agreement.
Okay, there's no future action of the council?
Not contemplated, that's the president's direction.
Statement was made about switching the, switching station. Now, moving the switching station from, I believe it was Jefferson Township to Hopatcong Borough, and it was described as a preferred site, preferred by whom? DEP actually went out into the field on that, because we did coordinate our work with Department of Environmental Protection, and they went out into the field to assess that site and report it back to us, and because again, through the coordination, that this was a preferred site to the Jefferson site in terms of proximity to the line, and again, 11 towers not having to be constructed, and also the actual site itself.
Okay, so you said the DEP?
Department of Environmental Protection, yes.
Determined it was preferred.
I know that PSE&G, excuse me, that they also have people in the field, but we worked with Department of Environmental Protection to make sure that they were in agreement on this site rather than the Jefferson site.
And is this site currently within existing right-of-way, or would the utility have to acquire additional right-of-way?
They would have to acquire this piece of land, I think they're in the process of doing that.
Okay. Under the, wildlife mitigation plan, that whole list that was put there. How would that money actually flow through? Would it go directly? It goes into this fund. I'm trying to understand. It would go into this proposed fund, which doesn't exist now. A fund would be created. And who would be, would they be grants? Would they be contracts? How would that money be distributed or appropriated for that program, and what kinds of groups are likely to receive? Is it engineering companies? Is it nonprofits? What exactly would that program be?
Well, first of all, I want to distinguish between these plans, which are part of the comprehensive mitigation plan. The $18.6 million is unrelated to these plans, so these plans are guaranteed through a performance bond to implement. In terms of the contribution to the council and the establishment of a new fund, what we anticipate doing is doing what was done in the Pinelands. A lot of the work in the development of this mitigation plan was premised upon some work that was done on a very similar agreement reached between the Pinelands Commission and BPU in the Connective Line, where a $13 million contribution was created for the Pinelands Council Commission. The way they created the fund and administered that fund was to provide grants on a competitive basis to municipalities in the Pinelands region. So it's anticipated that we would create a very similar process, a grant program for nonprofits and municipalities and counties, that essentially matching grants for open space acquisition, both green acres type acquisition and farmland preservation type acquisition. And in addition to the CMP anticipates that stewardship dollars would be a potential source of funding for stewardship.
Could also be used for the HDC bank, but the decision as to how the monies would be used would be entirely up to the council.
So the council would set up a program like the way the agricultural grants were set up, the guidelines and rules, and an application would be made to the council.
Right. And what we did, we premised this based upon the statutory framework in the Highlands Act, which authorized that any violations of the Highlands Act actually be funneled to the Highlands Council for consideration of use, either through for open space for farmland preservation purposes or for capital funding for the TGR bank. So the actual allocation of those dollars would be subject to the council for its consideration, essentially a grants program or potentially funding for the TGR bank.
Could you repeat which one? I'm sorry, I have to hear just the very beginning about it.
Well, the Highlands Act actually contemplated that all penalties associated with the Highlands Act be provided first for consideration by this body, Highlands Council, to determine use of those penalty dollars. And the jurisdiction of this council is either to provide funding for land acquisition, green acres for farmland preservation, or provide those penalty dollars for capital funding for the CDR bank.
Okay.
So we created the same approach that this council would decide the proper allocation of those dollars in terms of this.
Those are, when you say penalties for violations, that doesn't sound like an exemption.
No, I'm saying that we patterned it based upon the same approach in the Highlands Act for the penalties.
Okay.
such that the jurisdiction for penalties is the exact same as what we're proposing here.
But those are penalties where individuals or groups violated the act, not were granted an exception.
I'm not maintaining that PSEG has violated any provision of that.
I'm not either. Now, I'm just clarifying what you used as an example of something happened. You know, penalty is different from accepting funds to set up a program. I wanted to make sure I understood that.
Can I ask a question? So these funds, and you've said these funds would be up to the Highlands Council how these funds are used, but in terms of this proposal on the resolution is that those funds could only be used for land acquisition or land stewardship, or I guess development credit acquisition.
That's absolutely correct.
And it could not be used for staff or conversion.
You're saying, John, that was what, and what this proposal is?
That is the, if this resolution is written and passed, that would be what
we would. That's what it is. And I just have one last question about term is used minimal overview of the, I guess the changes of the revised application. Minimal practical degradation statement was represented or alleged or whatever. Who made that determination? How was that process? Who was involved in making that determination?
That's not the determination, actually. That was the, one of the goals and purposes of the act.
I thought it was said that this was consistent with that goal.
No, it was designed to be consistent with the goals of the Highlands Act itself. The standard of review here for the council is whether the project as amended is consistent with the goals and purposes of the act. The applicant, because the legislature created an exemption for utility upgrades, anticipated that these projects would normally be exempt as long as the project was consistent with the goals and purposes of the act. It doesn't mean they have to comply with the goals and purposes of the act. What this particular provision is alluding to is that one of the purposes of the act is to ensure that that the public attribute, the public benefits associated with public lands and lands associated thereby is somehow mitigated. The purpose of the mitigation fund, the contribution, is to mitigate for impacts that can't be directly addressed. And so that while it's clear to say that this applicant, because they're seeking exemption, will never comply with each and every condition of the Highlands Act. That's not the standard you're judging it against.
Thank you.
John? Just so that I fully understand where we fit in the process. In New Jersey, it's us, the BPU, that's reviewing this project. Is that correct?
And the Department of Environmental Protection is also reviewing
the federal process. That's the federal involvement with this?
Yeah. FERC is not involved in this process.
Okay, if regardless of our finding today, is it possible, and I guess the answer is it is, the BPU could find that it is a needed project that has to be done and could decide otherwise, in other words, if we were to turn it down, could BPU say yes and it get built regardless of our finding?
BPU will act regardless of our finding. What they will find is a basis of need. If they establish need, they will say the project moves forward. And at that point, it moves forward in one of three ways, either through an exemption analysis, an exemption determination, or through a Highlands Preservation Area approval with waiver, wherein the protections would only be afforded to the preservation area, so the 17 miles rather than the entire 26. And the third route, which, as I said, PSEG have never suggested to us, but it is a route that they could choose, is the federal route. So that's FERC preemption of the state. What we do here today is not determine whether or not the project moves forward. It's just the manner in which it does if BPU determines need.
Okay. On that scenario, has it been stated, that could all the mitigation plans go away if we decide against this project and one of the other methods are approved and they decide to go forward with it?
There would certainly be mitigation plans under the HPA with waivers, permitting process through the DP, but they would not be for the, forgive me for keep repeating, but they would only be for that preservation area section, not the entire 26 miles. And we used the regional master plan in working with PSEG. They would not, so there'd be other areas. For example, we look at things like carbon rock, vernal pools, issues like that, that might not be covered under the HPA with waiver. If they went the route of FERC, then we would have no say in it, and neither would it would go through a different process altogether, preemption of federal.
Because that was probably the intent of FERC, to just streamline the process.
I believe so.
Can I follow up to Scott's question? Is it possible if this project went to VPU, well, this, this is all in tandem, but with an inconsistent determination, because the plan is inconsistent with the regional master plan, would they have the legal or regulatory authority to require a mitigation plan of some type in order to, I mean, VPU is required to consider consistency report. They don't have to follow it, but they're required to review it. I believe all sister agencies, that's how the act is written, in which case could a determination of inconsistency together with a recommendation to require a plan, something like this, would VPU have the authority to do that?
No, I will have to double check, because I recall VPU in the Highlands Act does not have, like DEP does for water allocation permits, a mandatory requirement for consistency. So there is no VPU methodology to implement the regional master plan. VPU does look at certain aspects of their approval, but mostly it's relating to the use of land beneath the transmission line. So they are not a regulatory agency that's going to be reviewing aspects of environmental protection or any other aspect of which master plan.
Similarly, if an exemption were not granted and it was required to go to DEP, DEP can require a mitigation plan.
Yes, DEP could, but I think is alluding to the fact that DEP's jurisdiction is limited to the preservation area.
Legally required, not to say that the applicant couldn't offer to do more.
Without a doubt, the Highlands permit is designed to offset it, much like what's being proposed here, is designed to ensure that the project is meets the goals of the preservation area rules, and any waiver granted is designed to be minimal relief to ensure that the resources are protected.
Thank you.
If we were to deny this application today, as Scott asked, I understand that going through BPU, there still may be requirements for mitigation. What about the funds that are being made available for land acquisition? Is that a separate track, isn't it, than these mitigation requirements?
That is a separate track. That it only is for this plan, with for this exemption plan, to make it consistent with the goals and purposes of the Act. That is not something that would occur under the HPA with waiver. They would be looking at these plans, but you are correct that the financial contribution to offset those public attributes of the adverse impacts to those would go away.
So while mitigation for preservation area may come back, potentially the mitigation for the planning area could be lost, and the availability of funds to compensate impacted landowners in the Highlands region.
That is correct.
Maybe I'm missing this, and I guess this is attuned to timing with the BPU. I see their requirement, the reasonable necessity for this, somewhat as like the first step. So why is it that we procedurally have to have our comments right now when they're still deliberating, and that's going to occur, as you prognosticate, in December? I'm just not getting the timing issue. And then I have another question with regards to mitigation, and maybe I'm missing that. I haven't seen it anywhere. The idea of the coal production and how that also will have like a impact on our environment and the water. How is PSCG going to reconcile that?
Okay. On the first issue of timing, there's a series of actions that PSCG is going to be required to take in a series of permits, and they have a timeline in terms of these working with BPU and the PGM studies showing that there's need at a certain time. So they need to do certain work if BPU determines need to be able to achieve what they need to achieve in a given time so that they don't reach that point where they're having those burnouts. So there's a timeline effect here. There's also the fact that they put the application in last year, and DEP currently has an application pending towards them, for them as well. So the process would be that they would continue to do work in terms of being ready, but it will be BPU, it will all be BPU that's determined need. So the application is before you, and it, you know, it's your decision as to whether you want to move on it or not. NJDEP's public comment period closes, I believe, July 10th, and then they will be thereafter taking consideration as well. And as you know, they've been in the habit of taking a recommendation from us first for the area they look at, which is only the preservation area. On the second question, I guess that relates to the air quality issues in terms of our purview. And we did, in conversations with BPU,
Eileen, could you speak up a bit? I missed half of the last part of what you just said. I'm going to use the mic.
Okay.
About what you said, just said something about acting before we act. I missed that part.
My understanding of this act in general, the permit applicant has the option in general of choosing, the permit applicant who requires multiple approvals from multiple agencies has the option of sort of planning their course, whether they apply for all at once or apply for in sequence, and the regulatory agencies are then in the position of conditioning their approval on all the remaining approvals.
So there's nothing requiring us to take action today. There's not a timeline or anything. I mean, and I understand most applicants, they do it. They do it in tandem. There's no point to do it. But there is nothing, there's no regulatory, legal, whatever requirement that requires the council to act today. They could wait until BPU makes a determination whether or not the need argument is they agree with that or not, because BPU is not acting
right.
In that regard.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the Highlands Act does not include a timeline for exemption determinations. DEP has traditionally taken somewhere between 3 months and 6 months and been heavily criticized for the fact that they take that long. This was submitted back in September, so the applicant.
Excuse me, it was submitted
May.
I want to turn to public comments again because we're getting asked questions. Let me state for, because there are people here who I don't think have been at previous council meetings, we welcome your public comment. We ask that you come and sit in that chair and speak to the microphone. We ask that you state your name and where you're from, and then you limit your comments to 3 minutes. Sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, and council members. My name is Louis LaSalle. I'm the Vice President of External Affairs for the St. Barnabas Healthcare System, and specifically for St. Barnabas Medical Center. I have with me my associate, Mr. Robert Mulcahy. But I know that there's been some dialogue about time frames and applications. I wanted to get just a 1 minute history and then get to the issue that we would like to address. Thank you for your vigilance, and thank you for your careful planning. I serve on the Borough of Roselands Planning Board for the last 20-some-odd years. Pardon me, I'm chairman for the past 14 years. The Public Service Electric and Gas came before us with an application for some changes to be done at the substation. It goes from Susquehanna, obviously, to Roseland. So the Roseland substation was an important point for review. They came before us in 2008, and I believe it was early of 2009 we made the final approval with many site visits and cooperation on the part of Public Service Electric and Gas. For public service, for the community at large, for the industries in the area, all these thoughts were looked at by the planning board very carefully and approved.
Can I ask a question? Are you representing the town or the St. Barnabas?
No, I'm representing St. Barnabas. I just wanted to give a little historical notice to how the planning process, and I think that's been asked, do they do this concurrently? Is it at random? They do have a time schedule, and that was of major importance to the planning board. Now, we'll set that aside, and I apologize for that little historical note. We're here to talk about St. Barnabas's field for the plan, and I have with me Mr. Mulcahy. I'd like him to speak to the issue.
Briefly, I'm Bob Mulcahy. I'm the ABP of Facilities. I will be the direct recipient of the commodity that flows across these cables. And it is essential to have reliable power for healthcare. Without it, we cannot perform the life-saving tests and the hope that everybody that walks in the door comes for. People walk into a medical center looking for hope. And in order to fill that hope without reliable power, we cannot achieve that. And as our age population grows, as people get older, it's already been projected that the healthcare systems are going to be swamped, and all technology today with robotic surgery, all the MRIs we have, all of these electronical things are not going away. They're used more and more and more every day. And I understand, you know, people may not want to see these power lines in their community, but we are the end recipient of this project, and it is essential for healthcare that this takes place. Without it, we cannot provide the services to people that come in our doors. And as a user, this is critical that this gets approved. The PJM grid is well documented that it's stressed out. It's way over its capacity projection very shortly, and brownouts and those things that happened in California would be a total disaster for the healthcare community. And I can't stress enough how important this really is. And think of yourselves if you had a loved one in the hospital having an operation and the lights went out. I mean, really, it's true. I mean, anybody in this room, if you had a loved one and the lights went out in the middle of an operation, what you would be feeling and what you would be thinking. So on that end, I will end.
Thank you both very much.
I just want to say thank you to the council and to the chairman for listening.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
My name is George Petty. I'm a trail maintainer for the New York New Jersey Trail Conference, and a trail which is crossed at least twice by the current power lines. I'm also an associate naturalist with the Audubon, New Jersey Audubon Society, and I lead wildflower hikes out of Weiss Ecology Center. And I'm going to speak particularly to the idea of mitigation as it's expressed in your plan. One of the favorite sites for wildflowers, extraordinary preservation of wildflowers, is at Pyramid Mountain Natural Historic Area and County Park in Morris County. I lead wildflower hikes there at least four times a year. That particular area has been popular for at least 100 years. A description of the hike appears in the first edition of the New York Walkbook published by the Trail Conference in 1923. At the time, the trailhead was a mailbox for the farm that occupied the land. And I say all of this because I want you to know that what I'm talking about, I have experience on the ground. And this particular collection of wildflowers has taken at least 100 years to develop. It contains species that are not found elsewhere, not that they are listed always in the endangered list, but that they're very scarce in the highlands. And I hike all over the highlands, and sometimes I don't see these flowers elsewhere. The problem is, when the machinery that's required to build these towers comes through there, it's very likely that it's going to disturb these wildflowers. And it's not possible to mitigate that disturbance. It will take 100 years for it to reappear again, if it's possible. So some other way has to be found to preserve this valuable resource besides mitigation. Now, you have proposed in your comments, and I guess it's somewhere in the document, that professional scientists and engineers will accompany the construction crews. And you have also said elsewhere that you will seek to consult with people who are familiar with the site. The professional scientist and an engineer is not going to know where these wildflowers are.
So and your time is about up, so please include your comments.
My point is that you need to have people who know where the wildflowers are involved in the consultations that plan the locations of the towers. And you have to have them on site when the towers are being built. And if you do not do that, I think it's entirely possible that we could find hundreds, maybe thousands of people who know those wildflowers very well, appointing themselves as local experts and appear at the spot while the construction is going up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Chip Halleck. I'm president of the Newark Regional Business Partnership. We're a membership organization representing 450 businesses, organizations, and institutions that employ more than 160,000 people in New Jersey. Excuse me. We're committed to providing our members with the connections, information, and advocacy they need to be successful while revitalizing the state's largest city. And we appreciate the opportunity to comment on behalf of our members and commend the council for its consideration of the range of interests that are embodied in this issue. It's obviously a complicated issue, it's an emotional issue, and I commend you for your time and your service. We do support the transmission upgrade project as an absolutely critical improvement in the region's electric transmission grid. We also endorse the council's tentative agreement with Public Service that calls for an exemption from the Highlands Act. And it appears that that was an action that was clearly anticipated when the act was passed that this sort of exemption would be needed. And we also support the mitigation plan because of its impacts on the sensitive Highlands resources. We think the mitigation plan does make sense. We can't allow our electrical delivery system to fall victim to the same lack of planning and investment in infrastructure we've seen in mass transit, roads and highways, and water and sewer systems. In short, we see this as a necessary project to maintain safe and reliable electricity for the state citizens and its businesses and our members. To implement this project, Public Service is faced with the challenge to provide for our energy needs while balancing stewardship of the environment. And that balance is reflected in both the agreement that has been negotiated with the staff of the Highlands Council, as well as the company's national leadership on issues and innovations, including clean air, energy conservation, and solar power. Consistent with its environmental responsibility, Public Service has taken great efforts to minimize the adverse impact of this project by using the right-of-way, redesigning parts of the project, and the mitigation plan that's been discussed. The proposed agreement between the Council and Public Service balances the protection of land and water with the absolute need to keep New Jersey competitive by ensuring the state's businesses and residents can rely upon the steady flow of electricity to our enterprises and our homes. With that, I thank you for your time and urge you to approve that exemption.
Good afternoon. My name is Grace Sika. I'm from the New Jersey Sierra Club. The New Jersey Sierra Club strongly opposes PSE&G's application for exemption from the Highlands Regional Master Plan. We are opposed to this project for numerous reasons. PSE&G's application is not valid for the type of exemption they are seeking. Despite revisions, the application remains largely inconsistent with the Highlands Act. The application's attempts to mitigate are inherently at odds with the idea of preservation, and the monetary transfer from PSE&G to the Highlands Council raises serious questions regarding a conflict of interest. Exemption number 11 should not be granted for this project. This project is not an upgrade of an existing power line. It is a complete replacement that changes the scope and character of the transmission line that currently exists. The use of an existing right-of-way is too thin a veil to hide the 64 new towers, 12 new lines, miles of new access roads, and the new switching station that this plan calls for. The Hopatcong switching station is one of the significant changes in the revised application. However, this switching station should not be considered as part of this application for exemption. The Hopatcon substation is a major Highlands development and should be regulated and permitted as such. This building is not part of the existing right-of-way and is not a rehabilitation or reconstruction. It is a permanent structure and will disturb more than one quarter acre of forest. The Highlands Council should review it as an independent application at a later time. The second significant difference between PSC&G's initial and revised application is its mitigation plan. This proposal should be judged by the impact it has to the Highlands, not by how much those impacts are mitigated. The proposal is inconsistent with the Highlands Act. This project will have direct negative impacts to water quality, wetlands, steep slopes, riparian corridors, buffers, areas of endangered species, forested areas, recreational and scenic areas, as well as having negative economic impacts in the region. The secondary impacts may be equally as profound, such as the construction and service roads that will cut through steep slopes and forested areas. The 16 to 40 foot wide roadways will have significant effect on up to 200 acres of land in the Highlands, creating impacts similar to the lines themselves: stormwater, forest fragmentation, degraded habitat, degraded scenic and recreational uses. PSC&G proposes to mitigate by purchasing open space. Buying undeveloped property does not mitigate the effects of this development. These parcels are already part of a healthy ecosystem. There is no new habitat that can be purchased. Many of the areas that would become open space are already protected by the Highlands Act. This plan will result in a net loss of available habitat. The Sierra Club firmly believes it is impossible to mitigate the full spectrum of impacts that this power line will inflict. There is no mitigation for the mercury and NOx pollution emitted into our airshed by coal plants in Pennsylvania. Absolutely. There is no mitigation for stormwater or siltation. There is no mitigation for the scenic and recreational impacts. The $18.6 million also raises concerns. The transfer of funds, we question whether or not the Highlands Act provides the council the ability to purchase and use funds of that nature. And also, more importantly, an $18.6 million transfer between an applicant and a regulating agency appears to be a glaring conflict of interest. We strongly encourage you to deny this application and also to consider how this plan violates the Energy Master Plan. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, let me ask two things. One, come up with a point, sir. Either.
Go ahead. Your point. What people say.
Okay. Please try to refrain from applauding or laughing or and also probably more importantly from whispering to each other, because this is carried very well.
Definitely. My name is Chip Garrity, with IBEW Local 94, and I'm also a PSC&G employee. We represent about 4,200 members, and I just want to say this project has nothing to do with our people, but it is we are at a pretty fair point in life where we're trying to reduce the use of electric with the master plan, yet we're using 25% more. Everything is stretched, you know, as you had up on the board lines built in the 20s, need an upgrade. We don't have a way around it. We have to get juicing. I understand what everybody's position is. I understand that everybody's sensitive to their areas, but we need electric at the same time. If we don't have enough electric, we don't grow, and we have to be able to continue to grow. This project by itself would generate about 1,000 jobs in a time when we're over 9% unemployment in the state. So it gives us the electric that we need, helps us with the jobs. Good project. I understand sensitivity, but I would ask you to support in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jay Lobengeier. I'm the Assistant State Director for the Nature Conservancy of New Jersey. I'd like to offer a few comments today regarding our experience with Public Service Electric and Gas, or Public Service Enterprises Group. The Nature Conservancy has enjoyed a 14-year partnership with PSC&G in the implementation of one of the largest wetland restoration projects in the United States. Originally developed as part of a comprehensive mitigation program related to the operation of nuclear power plants down in Salem County, the project has led to a very significant set of improvements in both the health and biological diversity of the Delaware Estuary. We've been very impressed with PSE&G's commitment to communities that host restoration sites and the PSE&G's desire to achieve the best possible outcome for the ecosystem. PSE&G was extremely responsive to concerns that were raised during the public process, and it has lived up to all the commitments that it has made. While we are not intimately familiar with the details of the mitigation plan for the Susquehanna to Roseland line, we do feel that the council could have no better partner than PSE&G in working to craft a possible best outcome. We are aware there are concerns about the potential impacts from the project, both from interests within and outside of the Highlands. However, we'd like to commend the council on bringing such an innovative solution to public dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kenneth Rosenfeld. I'm here representing Longwood Lake Cabin Owners Association. We own approximately 600 acres of wood and lake in Jefferson Township. With a current PSE&G right-of-way, we will be severely impacted by this proposed plan, and as you can imagine, we oppose it. I just wanted to address three issues I heard council members raise, very quickly. Number one, there's no question this energy is coming from coal-fired plants in Pennsylvania and part of the grid in West Virginia and in Virginia. That is never going to be mitigated by anything considered today by you. It will increase pollution. It will increase acid rain, it will increase mercury poisoning, there will be more people going to St. Barnabas Hospital and children being born with deficiencies because of that. They won't run out of energy, but they will have many more people with disabilities. This plan is an overall plan to provide energy to New York City, all right? It will not benefit New Jersey. It will detriment New Jersey, not only because of the environmental impacts, but also because all the ratepayers of PSE&G are going to be paying for the $18 million that this council may receive. They will be paying to support the interest on the $4 million that are going to the bond plan to be posted. And they will be paying for every moment of PSE&G's time for this ill-conceived plan. This is not a smart grid. This is not a green plan. All right, those things exist. The world changed recently. All the presumptions on this plan were developed in the five-year study prior to 2007, when growth was tremendous. Growth has stopped. We all know it. In fact, it's decreasing, and the governor's plan in New Jersey is to reduce consumption. We occupy a strategic point on this plan. I believe it's one of the only places where wetlands are being crossed on this proposed route, Longwood Lake in Jefferson Township. It's all, virtually every acre we have is part of the preservation project, preservation protection. Every inch of tower that increases the current towers, which range about 85 feet right now, will be visible by everybody, all right? Right now, most of the time, we're in a valley. The tree line and the hills covered the towers will be impacted by that. The mitigation, PSE&G has been a very poor neighbor of ours. They own a right-of-way over our land. They cannot control trespassing. They cannot control the fences. They cannot control access onto their right-of-way, onto our land and their towers now. When they start putting huge equipment on supposed access roads that I can't quite follow the plans of the access roads. I know they're going to be on our property, but the length of them is disputable with severe impacts. How are they going to protect the huge amount of material? Now, the last thing I want to say, and I'm leaving, is this is a concept plan. Until this council gets a plan that it can review by detail, it should postpone any vote on it. It should be a well-thought-out plan before you vote. Thank you very much for your time.
My name is Deborah Post, and just to start with a little bit of a reality check here, I have a 150-foot JCP&L easeway running through my property in Chester. I own and operate a farm.
Can you people stop whispering, please? Or go out in the room if you need to go ahead.
I own and operate a farm, and I sell apples underneath the easeway. Life still goes on underneath electrical easeways. They really don't impact farming, and they don't really impact wildlife. And for that matter, on the wildflower subject, on a well-maintained easeway, the wildflowers flourish because they're not being crowded out by all that invasive life, which grows everywhere else where all you guys want everything to go natural. Got to work on the invasive life. So nothing the matter with having easeways, and we can live and operate underneath them with economic activity with no problems. But what I'd really like to comment on today is the exemption process. Here we have a very large, well-funded corporation with lots of resources to dedicate to fighting for a 17 miles of their transition way. An upgrade that is much needed. It's obvious to anybody that's ever lived through an urban blackout. Wonder how many decision makers here have lived through an urban blackout. The result of 6 months of plans here is a myriad of mitigation, revegetation, protection plans, and let's just read dollar signs, dollar signs, dollar signs. Money, money, money. We throw money at the exemption process by well-funded corporations, because that's what it takes to get an exemption, right? What about the small farmer? What about the guy with 200 acres whose net worth you have literally taken away from him, who doesn't have a penny of cash to hire a lawyer, to even begin to look at an exemption process? But that was all part of the plan, wasn't it, Mr. Borden? Let's make sure that the little guy with no money can't even get to the table. And then from the big guy, big boys with lots of money in their pockets, we pull out financial contributions, the epitome of pay-to-play.
Mr. Chairman, the previous speaker made a statement in closing that was unclear. May I ask for clarification?
Sure.
He made the statement, this is a concept, not a plan. Is the upgrade plan a concept, or the mitigation plan a concept?
Mitigation.
I was referring to the mitigation plan.
That's it. Sorry.
Is what I was referring to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. My name is Elvin Montero. I'm the Director of Communications and Issues Management for the Chemistry Council of New Jersey. We represent 80 employers in the chemical, pharmaceutical, consumer products, petroleum refining, and flavors and fragrances industry. We have submitted, as you know, a letter of support for this transmission line project to the council and other regulatory bodies. I'm here today because we feel that it is important to reiterate that support, because the economic viability of our members is at stake. The high cost of energy continues to put our members at an economic disadvantage, and the more than 63,000 jobs we recreate at risk. With New Jersey's industrial ratepayers paying amongst the highest electricity rates in the nation, the eighth highest to be exact, which translates to about 60% above the national average, you can appreciate why an energy-intensive industry, such as the business of chemistry, which we use power to not only we use energy not only to power our manufacturing facilities, but as a raw material or feedstock to create many of the energy-saving materials you'll be using in this new green economy. We would seek to support, so therefore you understand why we seek to support viable projects that can potentially reduce energy costs in our state while increasing reliability, which is a big concern of ours. A reliable flow of electricity is critically important. If that reliability is threatened, business will suffer and investors will continue to flee New Jersey. At a time when New Jersey manufacturing jobs are already threatened, for our sector alone in New Jersey, we have already lost 3,000 jobs if we look in 1 year. In the past year, 3,000 jobs have already been lost. This is an additional risk we can no longer take. Instead, by investing this money now, PSC&G will be creating jobs and generating revenue for government and businesses. It is not often that the council and PSC&G are on the same side of an issue. In fact, you can Google search and you'll find that we're usually on the opposite side. But we felt that this project was important enough and definitely needed, and certainly we trust that PSC&G will do all in its power and what is technically feasible to ensure that this project has minimal impact to environmental surroundings. This much-needed upgrade will help all electric ratepayers and help keep jobs in New Jersey. Members of the council, the Chemistry Council of New Jersey and the chemistry industry believes that access to reliable, affordable supply of energy is vital to chemical makers, the future of the New Jersey manufacturing base, and the health of the New Jersey economy as a whole. This is why we're here today in person to further voice our support for this project and to urge your vote of support as well. Thank you.
Good afternoon, council members. Thank you, as everyone has said, for the opportunity to comment on this clearly emotional and complicated topic. However, I'm not going to talk about the economic or environmental impact on the region.
Can you introduce yourself?
I will.
Okay.
I want to talk about the reliability issue. I am Pam Hirsch. I am Vice President of Government and Community Affairs for Princeton Healthcare System, which serves about 320,000 patient visits in the Mercer, Middlesex, and Somerset County regions of New Jersey. Without getting a terribly negative reaction from the audience, I have to reiterate the concept that the reliability of power to a hospital is about as basic as the functioning of the ability to breathe for a person. More than anything, we rely on electricity 24/7. When the power goes out, we can function on a minimal basis with emergency generation. That source of energy, however, not only is extremely expensive and environmentally inadequate, but it's also very limited, will only last a few days, and only serves the core region of the hospital, like the emergency room and the operating rooms. It can cause chaos. I have been at the hospital through two brownouts and blackouts, and it's extremely disruptive and dangerous to the health and welfare of the patients. So this issue of reliable energy it shouldn't be a we-they issue. We're all in this together. In addition, though, I would like to comment on PSE&G's role as a citizen of the state, clearly committed to green and sustainable initiatives. As some of you may know, we are building a replacement hospital just a couple of miles from our current facility. And PSE&G has been working with us continually for 2 years to make sure that our hospital is the model of carbon abatement, cutting back our energy use to make it as smart a facility as possible in terms of environmental carbon footprint. And I am confident that PSE&G is exhibiting the same commitment to the environment in planning this transmission line. But the technology demands of the 21st century are excruciatingly extensive, and traditionally generated electricity is something we have to keep running through our infrastructure veins. Thank you.
Comments on this side?
Yes. Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today. On behalf of our members, we vigorously oppose a finding of consistency for the PSE&G Susquehanna-Roseland 500 kV transmission line. My colleague Elliot Ruger will speak on behalf of the coalition also, touching on different issues from those I raised here. We have earlier submitted comments on this project and wish to amend them as follows. I know you all read every word we sent you. Inappropriate and unacceptable comprehensive mitigation plan. The New Jersey Highlands Coalition is opposed to the comprehensive mitigation plan submitted by PSE&G and respectfully requests that the Highlands Council reject this plan or any future mitigation plan which includes a payment of any type to the Highlands Council. We believe that such a payment cannot help but create a public appearance that approvals from the Highlands Council are for sale, that the Council will consider accepting what in essence could be considered to be a bribe. After all the work you have done leading up to today, this is very sad. The Comprehensive Mitigation Plan calls for the development of a series of resource-specific mitigation plans. Absent the development of these plans, it remains uncertain as to whether or not these plans will actually be able to provide the level of mitigation appropriate to compensate the region for the resources that will be adversely impacted. PSE&G's failure to provide these plans in advance of your consideration for this proposal is not appropriate and will exclude the public from the opportunity to truly comment on the mitigation proposal. We believe the public has been denied access to critical documentation submitted by the applicant to the Highlands Council, thus preventing the public from having any meaningful opportunity to evaluate the revised project and to offer informed comments prior to a final consistency determination resolution by the Council. We object to the inadequate release of public information on the proposed changes to the project outlined in the Comprehensive Mitigation Plan. Further, we are very concerned that Council members have been given only a small selection of comments provided by the public, whose comments have not been fully represented, we believe, in what has been given to Council members. For instance, we know little has been given to you about our recommendation that the Hapatcong switching station be treated as a major Highlands development. This is the Act's definition of a major Highlands development. Let's see if the shoe fits. Major Highlands development, quote unquote, means, except as otherwise provided, pursuant to subsection A of section 30 of this Act, one, any non-residential development in the preservation area, two, any residential development in the preservation area that requires an environmental land use or water permit or that results in the ultimate disturbance of 1 acre or more of land or a cumulative increase in impervious surface by 1/4 acre or more. Three, any activity undertaken or engaged in the preservation area that is not a development but results in the ultimate disturbance of 1/4 acre or more of forested area, or that results in a cumulative increase in impervious surface by 1/4 acre or more on a lot. Or four. Okay. Do you think it may be a major Highlands development? I will certainly give you the comments so that you have them for the record. But in closing, I would like to say again that this proposed finding of consistency will unnecessarily erode the public support for and integrity of the Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Boudreau, President of the Morris County Chamber of Commerce. We have 700 members in Morris County. We support the project as proposed in the resolution before you. I'm not going to repeat a lot of the things others have said, except for one thing that I think needs to be mentioned. We're spending a lot of time and effort in New Jersey trying to attract new businesses here, and you've already heard people talk about the need for power in the hospital setting and other settings, but the reality is, as we talk to businesses who are looking at New Jersey for a potential site for a manufacturing facility or the creation of jobs, if they're not absolutely sure they're going to have reliable, competitively priced power, they're not going to come here. And so I think PSE&G has really stepped up to the plate here in terms of the CMP plan. As an organization, we've looked at it, we've read it, we've discussed it. I think they're doing the right thing, trying to do the right thing. And as you look at this and going forward, it's very important for us to think about the future of our state, not today or tomorrow, but for the next 10 to 20 years. That's what this is about. It's about the region. And when you think about the presidential debate last year, there was lots of conversation around nuclear, wind, coal. No matter what you're for, we need a robust transmission system in this state to move power. And as this line that we look at today, it's been around since the late 20s, early 1930s, we continue to overload that line. We're going to have safety issues. We're going to have efficiency issues on the other end to the end customer, and we're going to put ourselves in a position, frankly, of not being able to compete for many years to come. So our Chamber of Commerce in Morris County very much supports this project, and we hope you will as well. Thank you very much.
Elliot Rubin, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. And I guess there is some wisdom in understanding that water and electricity don't mix well, which is perhaps why the BPU is the sole body which will determine the need for this project. whereas the Highlands Council will be looking solely at how it affects the water and other natural and cultural resources of the Highlands region. The public has been denied access to critical documentation submitted by the applicant to the Highlands Council, thus preventing the public from any meaningful opportunity to evaluate the revised project and to offer informed comments prior to a final consistency determination by the council. We object to the inadequate release of public information on the proposed changes to the project outlined in the comprehensive mitigation plan. The initial Highlands consistency determination dated January 22, 2008 was released with a supplement of maps providing a visual depiction of the project's impacts upon Highlands resources. The amended application and subsequent revised Highlands consistency determination released for public comment on May 21, 2009 did not include any maps or depictions of the proposed changes, notably the new switching station and location or maps of the revised access road locations. Failure to provide the public with this information has made it difficult for the public and impacted communities to contemplate what revisions have been proposed and to provide meaningful comments. Additionally, it is impossible for the public to determine whether or not PSC&G has truly worked to avoid or minimize project impacts. Therefore, the revised Highlands consistency determination public comment period must be extended at least 15 business days beyond the date that such maps become available to the public. To date, no maps, aerials, narrative descriptions of the access road location or affected Highlands resources concerning the Apatcon switching station have been made available. Nor is there any public notice given indicating that these materials would be available for review at the Highlands Council offices. This is inconsistent with the Highlands Council's project review process to date. Block and lots cannot truly capture the project's impacts, nor do they show the site-specific project design and locations of impacts. The public has been prevented from determining the extent of impacts to any specific resources. Since PSC&G has not amended its application before the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, there has not been any expert testimony about the Apatcon site available anywhere. I'll finish up. The public has been shut out of the process, and meaningful public comment on the revised switching station is entirely not possible.
Thank you.
Chairman Weingart, Director Swan, council members, my name is Matthew Lally. I live in Sussex County, Andover Township. Chairman Weingart, in your own words, the New Jersey Highlands is a place of enormous beauty and abundant environmental treasures. I could not agree with you more, and I think I speak for all or most people in this room today. Chairman Weingart, Director Swan, council members, you state in your recent announcement on this matter, dated May 19, 2009, and I quote, "If the proposed Susquehanna-Roseland 500 kV transmission line project is approved by the Board of Public Utilities, PSC&G will work with the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection on a new comprehensive management plan that will protect the resources of the environmentally sensitive Highlands region and address many of the concerns brought up by the Highlands Council staff, municipalities, environmental groups, and property owners when the project was initially proposed. I respectfully ask, is there any concern surrounding this proposed project that is greater than the concern over PSC&G's plan to erect 150 to 190 foot towers for what may be unneeded 500,000 volt power line that will forever scar the Highlands? Is this concern addressed? I do not believe it is. The National Park Service continues to have great concern about this project. Shouldn't the New Jersey Highlands Council also have great concerns, considering the significant and permanent devastation this project would have on the highlands and some of our state's most critical and sensitive natural resources. The New Jersey Highlands is cherished and appreciated by millions of New Jersey residents and visitors to the region for the beauty of its rolling hills, scenescapes, majestic views found nowhere else in the state. Chairman, Director, Council members, I urge you to think carefully and with conscience as you vote. Do you truly believe that PSE&G's proposal meets the consistency requirements of the New Jersey Highlands Regional Master Plan? I don't believe any of you want to be responsible for these special lands forever being known as the Highlands, not because of its natural beauty and cascading topography, but instead for the miles of nearly 200-foot high power lines that would slash it if this project is approved. Please consider that this will be your legacy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Weingarten, Council members. My name is John Galandak. I'm president of the Commerce and Industry Association of New Jersey, an 850-member professional association that has members throughout the state. I thank you for the opportunity to share Commerce and Industry's insights into the proposed PSE&G upgrade to the Susquehanna-Roseland transmission line, and on behalf of our members and you, who pay some of the highest electric rates in the nation, we urge the speedy approval of these upgrades to help increase reliability while bringing short and long-term benefits to the regional economy. New Jersey's businesses will need a reliable source of electricity at a reasonable rate in order to sustain themselves and grow profitably into the future. Each dollar spent on higher rates or time lost due to a brownout or blackout means fewer resources to hire employees, improve products, and service customers. That is why Commerce and Industries members find some of PJM's findings so disturbing. As this panel is aware, PJM, which is an independent group tasked with ensuring grid reliability, warns that without this upgrade, the region risks brownouts and blackouts beginning as early as 2012. While the state legislature and governor have outlined goals for generating energy through renewable resources, the technology to provide a base load does not yet exist. Furthermore, statute sets goals for 2020, 8 years after PJM warns of a power disruptions to the region. In California, a rolling blackout of 20 hours was predicted to reduce gross state product by 1.7%. New Jersey can't afford to risk the same type of loss. Given the need to increase reliability and capacity, we applaud PSE&G's proposal, specifically because it provides the increased power through a minimally invasive plan. The proposal under consideration is constrained due to the current right-of-way, meaning it will minimize disruption of daily lives of neighbors and businesses. Furthermore, moving the switching station significantly shrinks the project's footprint. The change in plan was made in response to environmental concerns that were raised and symbolizes the way PSE&G operates its businesses. At PSE&G, there's a culture of concern about the environment that places a premium on its decision-making. Furthermore, PSE&G is committed to doing all it can to help New Jersey achieve the goals set forth in its Energy Master Plan that include a significant reduction in greenhouse gases through a variety of approaches, including energy conservation and the development of sources of renewable energy. Finally, our association wishes to stress the economic benefits derived from the construction. Many jobs, and they're estimated by a study by Rutgers University, 4,000 job years, in other words, 4,000 jobs that would last for a year. In this time of economic recession, a stimulus like that is much needed and much appreciated. But furthermore, in the long term, the project, and most importantly, will relieve stress on the grid. Congestion has been a key factor in driving New Jersey's electric rates well above the national average. That relief, in turn, will lead to rates that will be lower than what they would be without the upgrade, saving New Jersey residents and businesses $60 million by 2013. Based on the need to increase reliability and baseload, the short and long-term economic benefits of an upgrade, and probably most important to this council's consideration, public service and gas's sensitivity and commitment to environmental quality, and the risks posed by doing nothing, Commerce and Industry strongly urges you to approve PSE&G's proposal. And I thank you for your consideration.
My name is Rachel Weinrich, and I'm a student at Rutgers University. Am I able to ask a question?
No.
Okay.
If you're able to ask, we will answer.
Okay. Well, for afterwards if someone wants to tell me if any of this electricity will be used by New Jersey or if it just keeps going into New York, because I have heard that it goes straight into New York. But I was just curious about that. But I guess you could say I have a suggestion. I think electricity is important, but I also think it's taken for granted in this day and age, and that people use it without realizing where it comes from and the effect it has, especially when you're talking about coal and things like that. And like they're saying about California having the urban brownouts, they did, and they also made some changes by conserving energy that proved to be successful and were fairly simple, and they got everyone working together to you know, get rid of their brownouts. And I think New Jersey and New York and these areas should also look at conserving energy. There's a really great example with Austin, Texas. Instead of building, I don't know how many megawatt plant, they implemented a plan, what they call the conservation power plant, and it created a bunch of jobs where they had people going around making homes and businesses more energy efficient, and they were able to save millions of dollars and also save electricity that never had to be produced. So save natural resources, and it helped the air quality. It made people more comfortable in their homes. They didn't have drafts, and I'm sure everyone knows things that they can do on their own, and maybe PSE&G and New Jersey should work together to implement a program like that that will have a much less of an effect on the surrounding environment. Thanks.
Tom Hill, Freedom, New Jersey. I want to thank you for hearing our comments and putting up with the comments from other people who are not speaking to the issues in front of you, because you're not determining need. You don't care about jobs in New Jersey. A lot of those people were sent here with notes from PSE&G, and I came with my own notes. In regards to the mitigation plan, there's many things which cannot be mitigated. You cannot mitigate cutting down a 60-year-old tree. You just can't move and plant a 60-year-old tree. You can never mitigate a view shed. There's no way. Issue blinders, maybe, to everybody who passes close by, but then they'll be crashing into those big towers. There is no mitigation plan of any sort. In fact, on page 3 of your Highlands RMP consistency determination, you note that the CMP plans have not yet been prepared. So I ask you, have you, the council, evaluated the mitigation plan? And the answer has to be no, since the mitigation plan has not been done. There are over 20 miles of temporary access roads in the Highlands area, many more throughout the whole project. They'll be 16 feet wide, 12 inches deep, filled with large gravel. Impossible to mitigate, just impossible to get those stones out of the area and to replant the forest coverage and woodland coverage that exists. The $18.6 million should acquire 2,500 acres of land and cover stewardship. The Highlands Council is not allowed to own that land, so you do have to put grants out there for other people to own that land. I'm wondering how much it might cost to administer those funds to the people of New Jersey. Also, the $18.6 million will be not PSE&G's money, it's ratepayers' money. It's our money. It's your money. Make them pay shareholder money and put that money down and see what their shareholders want to say about that. The special environmental zone, where no development is allowed according to the Highlands Act of 2004, has with their 7-mile radius or move around the power lines, you are going to affect over 12,000, just shy of 13,000 acres. Out of 19,000 acres, that comes out to 68% of the special environmental zone. the very, very sensitive zone that has been, you have been charged with protecting. I would say that that's way overkill on doing that. Okay, I want to thank Ms. Pasquarelli for her questions regarding the consistency of this. Thank you very much. You seem very concerned.
Thank you.
My name is Sheila Moriarty. I'm a Gainer. I live at 202 Millbrook Road in Hardwick, New Jersey, which is approximately 1 mile from where they're going to be expanding or proposed expansion of these lines.
I'm very nervous,
and I'm not feeling extraordinarily well today. But because I live so close within what will be long-term effects of this voltage, that's why I'm here. I guess I'm a little naive in thinking that it wasn't just supposed to be about aesthetic value, why the Highlands Coalition and, you know, why this was all created. I thought it was for the benefit of the residents and taxpaying citizens of New Jersey to help provide a safer environment for which we live in. It's a known fact that New Jersey has the highest rates of all forms of cancer worldwide. We have the highest rates per citizen. Of population of any country in the whole world and of any state in the country. We have the highest rates of cancer. There was a study from the University of Connecticut a couple of years ago that came out about, we have, I think it was 230 megawatts is what PSE&G is currently putting through those lines. The study suggested that at 360 megawatts, these lines should be underground because of the detriment to human health. Cancer clusters just in Blairstown, New Jersey, there's one road that these lines go through, and I know of three people who have had very rare forms of cancer, and they've all died. And we have one friend who's now, he's only 32 years old, and he's battling a very rare form of lymphoma. The 500 megawatt voltage is, 140 megawatts higher than what this study is suggesting, that these lines be underground so that they don't affect human health. That's really my biggest concern. You can't replace what we're doing to the environment in New Jersey. But I really would hope that with all good conscience, you would take a look at why is PSE&G putting up. I've worked with Joan Verplank at the State Chamber of Commerce. I'm trying to open a business here in New Jersey, in Johnsonburg, where these wires will be within, you know, 5 miles, 6 miles. When I worked for this commission as a volunteer, I was on the Morris County Board of Chamber. And by the way, the Morris County Chamber of Commerce has, I can't tell you how many times they've given citizen of the wards and how much donations PSE&G has made to the county chambers in this state and the state chambers and to St. Barnabas. But the issue here is that businesses aren't leaving New Jersey just due to the environmental regulations. People are leaving because of the tax situation in this state. I'm trying to open up a restaurant and Corzine's going to charge me 25% more on all my liquor sales. Okay, I'll finish just in saying that the same issues that prevailed in 1995 when I was working with Joan Verplank as to why people were leaving, none of which were electric rates. They're the same issues 15 years later.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eric Stiles, Vice President of Conservation New Jersey Audubon. I am solely speaking on behalf of the organization today. I'm solely authorized to do so, and I brought my own comments. I want to stress that in regards to this application, we are not commenting on the need for the voltage. We are not commenting on the human health effects. We are restricting our comments to the land use impacts. Also recognize that for the first application before you on mitigation, you got the 800-pound gorilla. And this is a very important that you take your time to collect the information and get this right. So throughout the development of the Highlands Regional Master Plan, time and again, New Jersey Audubon stressed the need for avoidance, then minimization, then mitigation, and not to step any of those individual incremental leads in regards to the review of an application. Furthermore, we stressed for a finding need of no net loss in regards to those resources. We feel very strongly that this application follows that hierarchy. First, we go from avoidance. When you look at the three routes that were proposed, clearly this is the one that avoids the greatest impact. It uses an existing right-of-way that has been in existence and managed as such since the 1920s. Second, when you look at the minimization efforts put forward by Public Service Electric and Gas, first you have the relocation to Hapakong of the station in regards to reduced impacts. Second, in regards to Troy Meadows, the idea of removing the line from Troy Meadows, moving those adjacent to 280 will have a great net increase in the value of Troy Meadows in regards to ecological integrity, the value of birds, and reduction of bird strikes. I want to stress that we, as a staff, Troy Edel, our Director of Conservation, who is a restoration ecologist, an expert in that, Dr. David Mizrahi, who was a national expert in regards to avian strike issues, and myself, has spent well over 100 hours reviewing this plan. In regards to the mitigation plan, we think there are some critical pieces for the Highlands Council to adopt itself. First, we stress that the Highlands Council needs to appoint a technical oversight committee for the mitigation plan. The committee must be comprised of resource experts consistent with the technical areas of impact and not a stakeholder group. The committee's function should be to ensure a finding that any proposed mitigation activity achieve the no net less standard for the impacted resource. To the maximum extent practical, the mitigation remedy should be as close as possible to the site of impact. New Jersey Audubon also feels that much of the mitigation can occur on or immediately adjacent to the right-of-way. The irony is that some of the best scrub shrub habitat we have in the Northern Highlands is this right-of-way. We have a monoculture of aged forests. Wildlife species, plant species, endangered habitat requires this early successional habitat. If done properly, the mitigation can be done largely within the footprint of the existing right-of-way. We stress that to the penny, 100% of the contribution to the Highlands should be utilized solely and exclusively for the purposes of acquiring critical lands, supporting preservation, conservation, and stewardship activities, and generally enhancing the Highlands region related to the project. We feel under no circumstances should the funds be used for any operational capital costs associated with the New Jersey Highlands Council proper, including staff. This is important both from a substantive and perception matter. While the substance is probably self-evident, thank you. Lastly, we would ask that these restricted funds be placed truly in a restricted account that cannot be rated to balance the budget. We have very detailed comments in regards to each of the components for the mitigation plan. We feel that with some minor modification, devil's in the details in regards to implementation, a net gain can be achieved through the mitigation plan as proposed by Public Service Electric and Gas. We have also, again, full disclosure, have had a long-standing relationship with the company, but these remarks were prepared by me for my organization. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Weingarten and council members. My name is Scott Olson. I'm a councilman from Byron Township, but today I'll be making this statement on my own behalf. The views that I express here are my own and not necessarily that of the township's governing body. That said, however, I will quote excerpts of the Byram comments, which do reflect the opinion of the township. I'm concerned by the direction the council staff has taken with this application. I believe this finding of consistency sets a dangerous precedent for future determinations, especially the Tennessee Gas Pipeline project currently being reviewed. The synopsis of public comments provided to you by staff, in my opinion, has been generalized and sterilized. As you will see from Byram's comments, I will soon quote, at least one section regarding the legality of monetary mitigation is never mentioned in this synopsis. Also of interest is that a great many of the positive comments came from PSE&G employees, retired PSE&G employees, and through a PSE&G generated form letter. I believe the council should see and know this information prior to making their determination. To make an informed decision, I believe that you should be given all comments to review in the context in which they were given. I must also question the staff's decision to accept monetary mitigation in lieu of determination that this application is inconsistent. It's amazing what $18 million will do between December and May. To quote Byram's comments dated June 12, 2009, which I believe you have not yet seen, The authority to accept this form of monetary mitigation is unclear, and the methods and procedures for monetary mitigation are not described anywhere in the Regional Master Plan's goals, policies, and objectives. In PSE&G's own words, quote, "This will create a new fund established specifically for the purpose of acquiring critical lands, supporting preservation, conservation, and stewardship activities. It is understood that this fund may be used as determined by the Highlands Council for the acquisition or stewardship of lands," end quote. Still comments from Viral. This is a process that has been created from whole cloth by Highlands Council staff without any public discussion, has not been properly vetted through any required channels, and for all intents and purposes, places a price for sale on Highlands resources rather than finding this the application inconsistent. I would argue that your staff, without discussion, input, or consent of this council, has created a policy and procedure for which you have no authority. Your charge by the Highlands Act and DEP regulations is to simply declare an application consistent or inconsistent with the Regional Master Plan. I have been able to find any goal, policy, or objective anywhere in the RMP that mentions monetary mitigation. Mr. Schreier, I know for a fact you're an open advocate of transparent government. I've seen you interrupt proceedings in this room to open a door which had been inadvertently closed to avoid the appearance of a closed meeting. Any of you who share Mr. Schreier's transparency in government should not approve this unvetted and yet-to-be-established process created by your staff without council input. Additionally, I question the hows and whys of this monetary mitigation number, again, with no public or with no council input. I'd love to be able to buy land for $7,500 an acre. I'm wrapping up here. Besides sitting on Environs Council, I also sit on our land use board. If an applicant came to me with a proposal that included an offer of payment prior to hearings, it would be called a bribe. When an applicant does the same before the Highlands Council, it's called ensuring a determination of consistency.
Thank you.
Real or perceived, this proposal is being called. With your consideration, PSE&G was given two meetings,
sir,
without any chance to rebut.
Sir, I'd let you go about 4 minutes, and we're going to be here all night. And you,
I believe,
concluding point.
I believe, sir, that if it takes being here all night to get the right answer, that should happen.
Oh, that's true.
So. Finally, as Byram states on page 3 of its comments, we concur with others speaking here today that the Jefferson PacCon switching station is a new construction. I'd like to conclude with another quote from Byram's submitted comments. The determination of necessity of this project is under the purview of the Board of Public Utilities, not DEP or the Highlands Council. We do not believe that PSE&G has shown the need for this project. It is strictly a profit-motivated, unnecessary creation of a major construction. We respectfully request the Highlands Council to use all the resources available to deny this project's exemption, or at least assure that other options have been exhausted before the applicant's considered for approval.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to submit my full comments to the Secretary.
Please. Comments on the side of the room?
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate your comment.
Thank you.
There's the door.
Come on.
It's over.
Marion Harris, Morris County Trust for Historic Preservation. We signed on to the New Jersey Highlands Coalition's comments, and the changes in the application give us no reason not to support those comments still. However, I would like to congratulate the staff on the quality of their original report on the cultural and historic resources section. They zeroed right in on the big weakness in that application, which was that they were looking through too narrow an area for resources that surprisingly they did not find. And also we should congratulate them on the survival of this 7-mile radius for the area of potential effect into your final arrangements, because that is a precedent setting arrangement for New Jersey, and will do good things for cultural resources if it is used. The other thing that I do want to say as a piece of the answer to Scott's question about federal reviews that are still hanging out there, there is a review which is required because it's a FERC project. Under federal historic preservation law, it will be carried out by the State Historic Preservation Office. And it consists not only of looking at resources which are already listed, but of going out to the communities and getting information about other resources which might deserve listing, even though they haven't been recognized formally yet. The jurisdiction of that review covers all of the project in New Jersey, not just the Highlands area. And it does sometimes happen under those Section 106 reviews that litigation is settled on. But people are allowed to sign on as interested parties, people like us, and the conversations go on for a very long time. And I'm wondering exactly how this process is going to be combined with the process that you're going through, which allows you to say yes or no at the end of it, presumably, which the federal law doesn't allow us to do, but which covers different forms of operation. So I think that's a subject for conversation, but on balance, we hope that it doesn't come to that.
My name is Libby Butler, and I live at 483 Split Rock Road in Rockaway. Our property is located near Split Rock Reservoir, and the existing right-of-way passes over our property. There are two current towers on our property. I've read the consistency determination, and I see some examples in there where PSE&G has given incorrect information, and I'm concerned about that. This has to do with the building of the access roads, where it talks about that many existing trails and paths now measure at least 12 feet wide and may only require the removal of select trees and so on. It also states that the applicant, it's anticipated that the proposed access roads would not result in significant new fragmentation of the Highlands resources. I just want to say that I live on this property. I walk those trails every day practically, and none of them is 12 feet wide. It's a mischaracterization of at least our property. Currently, PSE&G hires subcontractors to clear trees on the right-of-way, and when they do, the tree service has to walk in on foot because equipment can't be brought in on those access roads that currently exist. And then I just wanted to present two more points. My first concern has to do with the impact that this project will have on the water supply in the entire area and the drinking water of the individual property owners in the area. As you're aware, Split Rock Reservoir is part of the Jersey City water supply, and Jersey City owns acres of property surrounding the Split Rock Reservoir as a watershed to protect the water supply. No construction or trespassing is allowed in these areas currently, and the only boating that's allowed is non-motorized boating. This demonstrates how important the Split Rock Reservoir is to the water supply. And using Google Earth, I have unscientifically determined that at least five of the current towers are going to be crossing on the Jersey City land. And three of them are within 400 feet of the edge of the water, and one tower is in with 200 feet of the edge of the water. I would like to know if any studies have been done to evaluate the effect of what's going to be going on in the area on the Jersey City water supply. I'm concerned about the effect that the blasting and construction will have on the dam holding back the waters of Split Rock Reservoir, because that dam is very old. A large percentage of residents living in my area have private wells as their only source of clean drinking water. We're not hooked up to any type of town water supply. The wells are fed by, underground streams and runoff. I'm concerned about the effect that this major construction project will have on the private wells in the area. I worry about the effect of my well and my neighbors. How will the blasting and so on affect the integrity of the wells of the private citizens in the area? And my final point is an example. As far as this idea of how PSE&G has been a steward of the land in reality. As I mentioned before, PSE&G, they hire tree service contractors to come in and clear the trees. The terrain is rugged, and so they have to walk in on foot. The last time they cleared the right-of-way, they chopped down hundreds of trees and brush and left it sitting in the right-of-way, and it sits there today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
afternoon. My name is Wilma Fry, and I am working for New Jersey Conservation Foundation. The job of this Highlands Council is to assess the consistency of this project with the Highlands Regional Master Plan and the Highlands Act. The job is not to assess whether there is a need or who might be saying they have a need and so forth. The job is really to look at the proposal and see how it is consistent or inconsistent. In our opinion, the amended Susquehanna-Roseland transmission line application remains overwhelmingly inconsistent with the goals and purposes of the Highlands Act and the Regional Master Plan and the DEP rules. And the mitigation plan as presented does not justify a finding of consistency. The mitigation plan lacks transparency. GIS shapefiles that would have permitted the Highlands Council staff to evaluate changes against the Highlands information in the database were not provided, to my understanding. The staff did not even have that information. So the plan could not be evaluated in detail. The plan is incomplete. As I said, there were no shapefiles provided. It is flawed and it is unacceptable. It is very sketchy. It is an outline of a mitigation plan. There are various aspects that are totally insufficient that a colleague of mine, Dr. Emil DeVito, who is a professional ecologist, will address later, including the impacts on the very important neotropical bird species that migrate through the highlands, and the impacts of the construction access routes on forest fragmentation. And we have actually developed some maps that address these issues. But this plan is merely an outline. The payment to the Highlands Council erodes the integrity of the council and establishes a perception that developers can make contributions to the council in exchange for approvals they seek. Furthermore, it substantially underestimates the compensation that actually would be required to mitigate for extensive, long-lasting, and permanent degradation of multiple Highlands resources. To a great extent, that is because the impacts of the construction access routes are not fully considered, as will be addressed later, and the impacts on scenic resources are also not fully considered.
Thank you.
I would like to point out in the resolution.
You're finished. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Madam. Does anybody else suffer? Can I see a show of hands on how many more people would like to speak?
Good afternoon. My name is John Richardson. I am a member of the Freedon Township Council, but I am here appearing here as a private citizen. I live in Freedon Township. I think you've got yourselves are between a rock and a hard place. I'm not going to beat to death the things that have been brought up already or amplify the suggestion that you've sold out. That certainly is one of the things that we hear all around our neighborhood. I do suggest to you that using Exemption 11, routine maintenance and operation, rehabilitation, preservation, all of the other things that are listed there are restorative descriptions, not the entire ripping out of an infrastructure and starting over from ground zero. This exemption, as it is defined, certainly does not apply to this case. If I were managing this, I would suggest that you table this until you get through to the BPU, until the CMP is fully defined, and I'll leave you to look in your mirrors and figure this one out later. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. So I think it's still afternoon. My name is Kevin Duffy. I'm the mayor of Hardwick Township in Warren County. We're the first New Jersey municipality that will be impacted by this project. We are one of the more rural, undisturbed tracts of pristine land left in New Jersey and in the tri-state region. You know, this project obviously will have a permanent impact, you know, on that part of the state. It will impact the National Park, it will impact the Delaware River, the Appalachian Trail, and the Scenic Viewshed. Hardwick is also one of the 7 municipalities that are impacted that have filed for intervener status. And as part of that filing as interveners, we have requested from the BPU that they order or conduct a field test, so they have to get on the ground, ground zero, see the actual impact, see where the access roads will be, and see firsthand what this project will look at or will result in. I think, without reiterating too much of some of the previous speakers have said, I think, you know, being a state agency, the appearance of impropriety is as important as actual impropriety. And I think by approving this plan and accepting this financial arrangement, you know, that's one impact. And I think the other one would be, as interveners, you have severely undercut our leveraging ability, our power to work with PSC&G to try to take this somewhat off of the fast track. By trade, I'm a project manager, and to reiterate some of the things I just heard, if I submitted a project plan as incomplete and full of holes as this, I wouldn't be employed in that role any longer. I think we need to consider the issues of reliability versus demand. Reliability, no one's against reliability. You know, nobody wants unreliable power. But I think there's a premise out there that this demand may not, that's being projected, just isn't there with conservation efforts that are going on. There's the issue of dirty power versus clean power, and even PSC&G does not dispute that the majority of this power is going to be coal-based energy, which is the most inefficient. One more issue on reliability. PSC&G has a plant, Bergen 2, in Bergen County, which provides 600 megawatts to New Jersey, which they're taking offline in 2012 in order to sell that power directly to New York City. So it's more about getting a higher price than it is on meeting demand and reliability for New Jersey residents and taxpayers. Yes, I will. And I would just urge you not to rush into this. The interveners would like more time to do our research and to really get to the heart of some of these issues here. And again, that 2012 date has no magic to it that I can see, other than the fact that they're taking their Bergen 2 plan offline in 2012. Thank you.
Dr. Emil DeVito, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I'm a PhD forest ecologist. Thank you for the ability to comment. This mitigation plan is inadequate regarding a number of issues. It's really a collection of concepts, not a plan at all. The plans obviously need to come much later. There are at least 12 rare plant species and rare ecological communities. The mitigation plan suggests that some plants will be fenced and avoided, and that completely misses the mark on how to conserve rare plants and rare ecological communities, and it suggests that whoever's putting the plant together hasn't really even thought about it much. Nocturnal migrants are completely ignored by the mitigation plan. We have dozens of species of nocturnal migrant songbirds passing over the highlands and breeding in the forests, in the core forests of the highlands. And those two suggested practices for avian power line mitigation documents, I read them both, they offer really no suggestions on how to avoid nocturnal collisions. They're mostly about daytime collisions and location of power lines out of flyways, but there's no choice here on where to put the power line. It's a set thing. You can't locate it out of the flyways, and there's almost no way to measure the impact or mitigate for it. So that issue is really not addressed. PSC&G and the Delaware Bay Estuary Enhancement Program, they measured their impacts. They mitigated for those impacts. They did an incredible amount of science. The plan was the most incredible mitigation plan. NJCF wholeheartedly supported it. We think it was one of the greatest projects in environmental protection in New Jersey's history. this plan lowers the bar, clearly lowers the bar. This plan mentions that mitigation will occur on public lands. This is a public trust issue which cannot be allowed. The people of New Jersey bought those lands, own those lands, and own the rights to do things on those lands. You can't let somebody mitigate on public lands for free. People who own land in the Highlands, private landowners who have habitat that could be mitigated, I think would be quite upset to think that their land is not really available for the mitigation bank if PSE&G can get state land for free, or any other potential mitigation applicant. So I think that's a very serious problem to suggest that mitigation would occur in public lands. That should never occur. You seem to have avoided your technical report, or ignored your technical report, pages 39 to 41 on the ecosystem technical report, which talks about your 300-foot buffer to core forest when there's a forest fragmentation event. These access roads are going to be permanent. You destroy the soil when you build a road. If you take an old forest lane from 100 years ago and turn it into a construction road, you destroy soil. It becomes a vector for invasive species, for forest edge species. It causes fragmentation impacts. Your documents themselves say that those impacts reach 300 feet into the forest. We've made a map based on the old data, since we didn't have the new data, and we've calculated that there would be about 965 acres of forest fragmentation impact, and that's a far cry from the 20 acres of forest impacts that are outlined in the mitigation plan. So that would affect the monetary calculations. I'm sorry to go so fast, but I didn't want to run out of time on my 3 minutes. I thank you for the opportunity to comment. Thank you very much, and here are the maps.
Thank you. Hi. I'm really nervous. Thanks for letting me speak. I'm not an expert. I've heard and learned a great deal about things from some of the previous speakers. So I'll just give you from the layperson, property owner point of view. My name is Sylvia Ramos. I live in Hardwick Township. That was my mayor talking before. I own 140 acres right next to the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area. PSE&G has an easement right of way on one end of my property across the way is Count of Ebosco. It's across a little country road that is beat up. It's not going to take even one of those trucks in order to tear that road up further, and yet they're talking about putting an access way through there, an access road, which I don't know if somebody could claim they could put back forest mitigated after it's been taken away. But I know that's not your problem. I know that your concerns are about protecting the Highlands Preservation Area and about the Highland Act. I don't have the ability to give you a PowerPoint presentation, but I know when there's holes in one. I know when we're not hearing about crucial information having to do with a major Highland development, which would be the Popatcon substation. I want you to find a way to table this for now until you've had more proper work done on those issues from PSE&G. I think you have the right to demand more of them. I think the intention of what the council was formed to do directs you to do that. I have only of late been able to get information from dedicated people who are holding meetings all over the county, environmental commission meetings. On my way here, I had several phone calls from my neighbors and friends. We are now, just now, being able to form a group to get together, share information, and it's very urgent that you, the council, with what you are held to do, take the time to say, wait a minute, not so fast. You don't have to do this today. And I urge you to table it until there's further information, until the public is better informed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Russell H. Butler. I live at 43 Split Rock Road in Rockaway Township. I've lived there for 45 years. Power line right away runs through our land. and it is part of one of the six tracts in a special environmental zone in the preservation area. There are also two towers in this. I'm convinced that the proposed construction project will permanently scar the Highlands and flies in the face of the letter and intent of the Highlands Act. Assessing impacts and proposed restoration for maps and documents displayed on a computer screen in an office, while very helpful, does not tell the whole real story nearly as well as one short hike in the field. For example, in my area, if you start at Split Rock Reservoir at the dam and walk west on the power line right away, if you can walk it, because this is very rugged terrain. It's only about 4 miles from there to Berkshire Valley Road in Jefferson. I'm sure you're familiar, well, you're probably familiar with it. But I'd set aside a full day to do the hike. While hiking from tower to tower, if you would envision the incredible construction that this project will require, this is not trivial. This is a totally different scope than the original construction. Look at the amount of rock ledge that will be blasted away forever to allow heavy construction equipment to enter. And imagine felling the trees, bulldozing a road through, and bringing in truckloads of gravel for the road base. Imagine how circuitous the access roads will have to be in order to avoid the many wetlands and streams. Envision building the deep base required to support the huge towers, trucking them in, and raising them in place with tall cranes without disturbing the existing power lines. Try to figure out how any towers could be brought in and raised in the half-mile-wide Lake Denmark swamp at Picatinny Arsenal without major environmental damage. Look for, or rather try to find, the existing roads that PSG&G proposes to use instead of building new access roads. And if you find one, walk up it a bit and ask what kind of vehicle, if any, it would support without major rework. As you walk, you will probably wonder how the existing power line was constructed in the late 20s. As I understand, it was built largely by hand, in place, like a huge erector set. The steel pieces were brought in by horse and wagon and our small trucks. And the four support bases for the towers were blasted out, poured and packed with rock, pretty much by hand, and with the aid of small tractors and horse teams. What this proposal is an entirely different scope, entirely different. The 1920s construction was done in a way which was much less intrusive and damaging to the environment than what is now proposed. One more paragraph. I would hope and assume that actual in-the-field investigations have been or will be made, for they would crystallize the reality of the permanent damage that this project will do to the Highlands. Thank you.
Hello, Helen Heinrich, and I'm making my comments on my own from my experience of working with hundreds of the farm landowners in the Highlands. Just a couple of comments. First of all, agriculture needs power. And we can't stand brownouts either. I think the number two cost to farms after labor is electricity and power.
I'm sorry, John, I can't hear you.
Oh, okay. Agriculture needs power, and it's the number two cost to farms. Secondly, I hear that there might be a way to compensate some of the Highlands landowners. When I hear about a 7-mile swatch of even more regulation on lands and money that is going to be put up to compensate those landowners, I'm sure that's a very bad idea. And this is not a developer we're talking about. This is a public utility. So I don't look at it as bribery. It's sort of like the water tax. This is a way of taxing. I mean, if the power is going to New York City, let's let them pay for the compensation in the Highlands. I also hear that I think 165 Highlands development credits are going to be paid for in this process, and that's the first and certainly welcome. So I don't know whether you're going to vote it up or down or table, but I think the concept of getting money for compensation from certain applicants that are trying to do a public public project, and further regulating the land that's has no compensation yet, it's, you know, something that should be considered.
Thank you. Council, kind of thank you all for your comments. Council members have comments. We have a motion on the floor.
Can I just reiterate the end of the resolution that we are now going to vote on, Mr. Chairman?
Now there be it.
Yeah, I mean, we go through all resolutions, have a lot of whereases, preambles, and set the stage. Pertinent paragraphs begin now, therefore, be it resolved. Now, just like for the benefit of the here, everyone has a copy of it, I'm sure, by now, but nonetheless, for the record, the Highlands Council hereby finds that the revised project constitutes, quotation, routine maintenance and operations, rehabilitation, preservation, reconstruction, repair, or upgrade of public utility lines, rights of way, or systems by a public utility, unquote. And that the proposed project in both the planning area and the preservation area, quote, is consistent with the goals and purposes of the Highlands Act. That's the question before us. Therefore, be it resolved by the Highlands Council that the Executive Director is hereby authorized, consistent with the Council's deliberations, to 1. Issue a final regional master plan consistency determination for this project. 2. Issue a Highlands Act exemption determination with appropriate conditions. 3. Enter into any agreements necessary to implement these determinations. That's the nub of what we are going to be voting on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have comments.
Yes. Okay.
I'll start off by insulting most of the people in the room. I think maybe that'll get your attention. I haven't had a chance to look at the statistics, but I think I'm fairly safe in saying the large majority of the comments about this relate to need, which is not our charge here. We are not charged, authorized, nor are we competent to assess need. The transmission lines, I think everybody who made comments today, they're all valid comments for public forum. I respect, and I don't disagree with a lot of comments, but they're just irrelevant, as is to consider consulting everybody, as is jobs, as is health issues, safety issues, or whether or not this project will contribute to acid rain. I mean, these are all important issues. But I think we need to focus on what our primary objective, what we were appointed to do, what we're supposed to be doing here, and that is protection of environmental resources. And the proposed consistency determination, exemption approval and plan, this $18 million mitigation plan really are inappropriate, as is the process that led up to the development of these. As I said, it's not our role to determine needs, not our role to acknowledge inconsistencies and yet render a plan consistent. It is, to quote somebody's comments here, this plan is overwhelmingly inconsistent, and that's what we should be saying, and then let the proper authorities determine whether or not they're going to approve it. Nor is it appropriate for us to be accepting dollars from an applicant. I take those words about conflicts and appearances very seriously. I think what we should be doing is to note honestly where there's areas of inconsistency, then forward that report to DEP, BPO, BPU, and necessarily, if necessary, the Federal Energy Regulatory Authority. Those are the ones who are authorized to determine need and make some decisions here. DEP has a process in place for mitigation and for accepting funds. We do not have one. I concur with the comments about there's nothing in the old policies objectives or directions of the council in setting this up. I support what would be our proper role in a lawful process. And item two, this has been a non-transparent process in reviewing this application, the revision of the application, which I applaud PSE&G for working with our staff on that, but you know, we as public officials need to be concerned about that appearance and whether or not the public has oversight and input to it. Dittos with the development of the $18 million trust fund, and even most disturbingly, what I hear in the future, a non-transparent process for approving any mitigation plan. It will not be overseen by the council, will not be approved by the council. As I've argued many times in the last 2 years, there's been way too much delegation of these our responsibilities to staff, and it takes place the outside of the public view. And there's been no public presentation of the revised plan, which I think, given the significance and the importance of this project, really should have been done, and us to have a more deliberative review of this. And more comments than limiting people to 3 minutes. Now, PSC&G had hours and hours with our staff for limiting people to 3 minutes of comments. I'm very uncomfortable with that, but most of all with the appearance of impropriety. It looks like we're accepting money in return for consistency determination in a state that has been described of having a culture of corruption. I'm astonished. And the most benign criticism that could be made of this is that it is a shakedown of a public utility, who, as somebody rightfully pointed out, these funds will be paid by ratepayers, not by stockholders. Much worse charges could be made and could be alleged by the appearance of all this. I've spent 13 years in public service. Some of us work very, very hard to avoid appearance of impropriety. I'm very troubled. By how we all my comments here leading up to this, how we get to this point. And the precedents, those of us who work in land use, the precedents you set by things. I can hear applicants coming in the future and saying, as long as we can prove any public interest to our project and we offer a mitigation plan and a contribution to your fund, you are, based on precedents, now going to be required to grant us a determination of consistency, regardless of how consistent we are or not with the plan. And as I sit here, I also think, under the arguments made in favor of this and the strained logic, any project, any proposal could be approved by this council under the arguments that have been made, and that undermines the entire act. I mean, there has to be balance, there has to be consideration, but this just isn't the way to do it. And I know it's a matter of judgment, but I think the council has really lost its way on this one if we continue down this path. So in closing, my recommendations are that we do not pass this resolution. We do not grant consistency. We do not determine consistency. We do not grant an exemption. What we do is send this back to the staff to revise the consistency report and just lay out, honestly, where it's inconsistent. Should not grant an exemption to the transfer station or substation, I'm sure in the terminology, what really does not appear to be an upgrade. It appears to be an entirely new development, and I think other applications that would submit a similar specifications, I think we would determine that. It should go to DEP, and DEP should decide whether or not to create an exception for that under their process. Let the proper process and the proper authorities determine need. If they do, send it back here and work again with PSC&G. We're hearing what good citizens they are in the state of New Jersey. They offered a mitigation plan, well, let's and some other consideration. If BPU grants the approval for this, I think let's rely on them to come back to us if that happens and see in a much more public way going forward how we can let BPU act and get a full need assessment. Nobody in this room is an expert on transmission law, nor is our staff. That just should not be something.
Let me just offer my personal relationship to this issue. As many of you are aware, by profession, I'm an electrical contractor. I only do commercial work. I don't do any residential work. But I can tell you that all my clients, the biggest concern is quality of power, the amount of power. We install my firm installs a huge amount of generators, because I can tell you already that the power in New Jersey is, to quote my clients, it's unreliable. I don't know if that's my opinion of it. It's kind of a fuzzy thing to define. But the industry in New Jersey, the economics of New Jersey is shifting also. I'm watching the industrial base leave New Jersey already. The commercial base is filling its place. But what's definitely happening is the commercial clients nowadays definitely are using a lot more power than they used. Employees probably in New Jersey are going down. How many commercial employees there are, I think we've heard comments about that. But the amount of power every one of them use is absolutely climbing. I see that on a daily basis, going out there in the trenches, watching that take place. And also, a couple weeks ago, the New York Times did a series of articles, if anyone happened to catch it on the Sunday paper, about the infrastructure that's in place in the United States right now. Our proximity to Manhattan makes us a very focused area for the new data centers that are being built, that all the corporate companies are using. And again, that's a large amount of power that every one of them is needing. Now, what I'm saying is I think that there's a need already in place. This is not a build it and they will come situation. The need for more power is already here. It's just my gut feeling, but I can probably assure you that the BPU is going to find that the need is there already. So then if I take a step back and say, now what can I do as a Highlands Council member, I would think that what we could bring to this process is to accept what is being presented in front of us right now with the mitigation plans. And so I'm going to tell you that I'm in favor of what's being presented right now.
Hey,
did we receive comments from any other state agencies regarding this application?
We did receive comments on the first round from New Jersey Transit. I'm not sure if this... Oh, sorry, Chris will speak. Chris project.
The New Jersey Transit was the one state agency we received comment from.
Okay. What was the comment?
They were supportive of the project.
That was before. That was the first interview.
Yes.
On the basis of needing power for electrification and railroads.
Just one thing, and just to make a point, because several people did speak to the jobs that they're referring, and part of the regional master plan is Part 8, Sustainable Economic Development. Highlands Act establishes natural resource protection as the fundamental goal of the Highlands region that recognizes that development, redevelopment, and economic growth in certain appropriate areas of the region are in the best interest of all citizens of the state, providing innumerable social, cultural, and economic benefits and opportunities. The long-term integrity of the Highlands region requires economic and fiscal vitality, as well as the preservation of natural resources. So the jobs are a piece of what we have to, you know, take a look at when we're doing the consistency determination.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could just add a last point to Janice's comments. When the Highlands Act was proposed together, the 17 exemptions that are included envisioned that there would be opportunities for public utilities to come in for the exceptions that are granted. There was no indication, no understanding necessarily of what the nature of those so-called upgrades or repairs or whatever is included in the exception language might be. Technology moves at a very rapid pace, especially electronic technology and electrical technology. The fact that these 500 kilovolt poles are going in was not in the minds of the legislators when they put this act together. And I think it was deliberately so, because you don't know what's coming down the road. And so I think that the exemption was deliberately, not vague, but deliberately non-specific on those issues. And so to suggest that this would not be an exempt project under that exemption, I think this is the whole point of having the exemption in the first place.
Mr. Chairman, I just give some brief remarks, and I thought they were prepared to vote. This application for exemption has been before us, I think, as of late September of 08. Our staff has worked with the applicant to incorporate a comprehensive and unprecedented mitigation plan into the application, something I applaud our staff for doing. I think that's the role, to work with an applicant to, you know, to get the job done. Based on the staff's recommendation, my own reading, the clear entitlement to an exemption under number 11 under the Highlands Act. I first want to just give some brief comments about the debate that is taking place on this matter. As I said, our hardworking staff in this council have been accused by school opponents of this upgrade of being, and I've heard some derogatory comments both on that side of the table and unfortunately on this side of the table as well. And I wouldn't lower myself to talk the comments that I think are shameful for respected people who hold elected office in the state that we're trying to make a better state. Past kind of remarks that I've heard in this room today are hurtful and they're baseless and they're off base. When opponents resort to such baseless and malicious charges, it tells me they no longer have any arguments to make on the case and the merits before us. That is clearly the case here. All deficiencies in our staff's initial report on this application have been addressed fully. A good application has been made even better through a very comprehensive mitigation plan. I understand the issue of need of this transmission upgrade primarily falls on the BPU. However, since so many objectors have focused on this question, I want to make a few comments on it. The line that was built in the late 1920s, population of the county that I represent, Sussex County, was less than 30,000 people in the 1930 census. There were no computers, no big screen TVs, all the gadgets that are in one's home today, all running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in every room of our homes. Common sense would have told me the need for this project is obvious and will be determined and validated by the BPU. What amazes me is that this essential reliability upgrade was not needed even sooner. This upgrade improves overloaded circuits throughout the Highlands region. When you live in Bergen or Passaic or Morris or Sussex, you will benefit from this project. The electricity delivery system is fully integrated, as we've known over the course of studies and what took place back in 2003. It knows no state or county boundaries, as we learned in 2003, and an event in Ohio can cause a blackout to ripple to New Jersey. We're all here in this together, and we need to work together to avoid brownouts and blackouts and the economic disruption that comes with them. I'm very confident that in order for us to maintain a safe and reliable electricity grid with minimal impact on our natural and human environment, this will benefit New Jersey to maintain our economically viable and competitive for business. For those reasons, I'll be prepared to vote and call the vote, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Council members,
have
comments?
So we'll do this as a roll call. Alphabetical backwards. Scott Wickner?
Yes.
Tahisha Way?
No.
Glenn Petrano?
Yes.
Jack Schreier?
Yes.
Eric Peterson?
Yes.
Eddie Pasquarelli?
No.
Janice Kopach?
Yes.
Carter?
Yes.
Kurt Alstead?
Yes.
I vote yes. The resolution passes by a vote of 8-2.
Thank you. You have, they feel a little redundant, but we do have a public comment period on the agenda.
For anyone leaving who wants to have a good time, our next meeting is July 16th at 10 o'clock. Are there people who would like to speak in public comment period? Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
So adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Cool.
Everybody wants to speak?
I'm going to come. I already have. Thank you.